I have said that I take wisdom wherever I can find it, whether it comes from my people or any others, and I welcome anyone to do the exact same thing with anything else. And at the end of the day, I want to separate those who are just believing what they want to believe and those that would force others to do it. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Bob. Bye, Mark. I got to go. I'm out of time. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. On Wall Street today, stocks plunged more than 340 points in trading, then turned around. We'll have the closing numbers coming up in our business block. In Miami, a guilty verdict on all three counts was reached in the trial of Jose Padilla, who was charged with supporting Al-Qaeda. His two co-defendants were also found guilty on all of the counts. In Peru, the massive earthquake that struck yesterday has killed at least 450 people, and that number is expected to go up. More than 1,500 people have been injured. The quake's magnitude registered 8.0, according to the USGS. Its epicenter was 125 miles southeast of Lima, the capital. There have been several strong aftershocks. In Utah, 10 days after the mine collapse in Huntington, rescuers are hopeful after a sound was picked up by two geophones. They are now boring a fourth hole in the mine. Air samples will be studied from the third hole that was drilled. In Minnesota, rescuers have found human remains in two of four cars taken out of the wreckage of the I-35 West Bridge collapse. Two people are still listed as missing. So far, including this discovery, 11 people have been identified as killed in the disaster. Three U.S. Navy sailors are missing off the North Carolina-Virginia coast after their Navy plane crashed during exercises last night. Search and rescue missions are underway in the Atlantic Ocean. The White House has approved a plan to increase domestic spying with the use of satellites and aircraft sensors. This technology was previously mainly restricted to foreign surveillance use. The Bush administration says it will be used to combat illegal immigration, natural disasters, and terrorism threats. The U.S. will give Israel a $30 billion military aid package, which is a 25% increase. The money covers a 10-year period, so it will be $3 billion a year. Tropical Storm Aaron hit Texas today, about 25 miles northeast of Corpus Christi. A roof has collapsed at a Houston grocery store, killing one person. The heat wave that is gripping the South is responsible for at least 7 deaths in Memphis this past week. And residents of the Caribbean islands are preparing for Hurricane Dean, a possible Category 4 hurricane with 90-mile-an-hour winds. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news, coming up next.
Not that long ago, three bears were discussing how difficult it is to get a good night's sleep. What you sleep on is paramount to any sleep success. Papa Bear complained about how he was tired after tossing and turning all night. Mama Bear complained about sinking into each other like sleeping in a hammock.
You can't even turn the mattress over to use the other side.
Then Zizi the Panda told them about his perfect night's sleep on his Monterey mattress. It has much higher quality padding to prevent the hammock syndrome and has two great sides for twice the mattress life.
You know, panda bears are really smart. Hi, this is Brian Gingrich. At Monterey Mattress, our family has been building the finest latex, foam, and innerspring mattresses for over 20 years. We supply most of the leading resorts on the Monterey Peninsula. With such high standards of quality, customers purchase their mattresses here at factory prices and then ship to their homes across the nation. Discover the difference a Monterey Mattress can make in your life. Come see us at our factory showroom in Sand City or online at MontereyMattress.com.
A new study by Columbia University's National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse finds that high school drug use is getting worse. 61% of teenagers now say that they go to schools where there is a drug problem. That is up from 44% who responded that way in 2002. The FDA is warning that children under age 2 should not be given over-the-counter cold medications unless a doctor has ordered them. The FDA is reviewing the drug safety. Countrywide, the nation's largest mortgage lender announced it had to borrow $11.5 billion. The leading credit ratings agency Moody's may downgrade the company's debt rating to the junk status. So far this year, Countrywide has lost 60% of its market value. The Federal Reserve has put $17 billion into the banking system today. The Commerce Department reports that new home construction in July dropped to the lowest level in more than a decade. It fell 6.1% last month. Gold is trading at $658 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $71 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And taking a look at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 16 points at 12,845. The NASDAQ was down 8 points, and the S&P 500 was up 5 points. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I am making no promises whatsoever about tonight's program. I mean none. Oh, Lord. Let's see. The thermometer in the studio here says 92.7 degrees. Outside, it's even worse. And Agnes, with that look in her eye, that little glint, that gleam, that sparkle, that, ooh, I want to leave town look, the feeling that I get, says it's all good. Oh, dear. I'm ready for my close-up, Max. Yeah, you're number one in my book, too, Agnes. But it is. This is turning into the long, hot August. And it is brutal. Just brutal. And I'm too hot and cranky, and God only knows where this will go tonight. So, you know, just hang on for the ride. And if it sounds like I'm beginning, I'm melting, jump in and help, for God's sakes. Our good friend Mark Levine began his program by with a discussion of the domestic spying thing, you know how I am. I think there's a hero out there who is begging America to let him work with us to fix what's wrong. With all the spying garbage and you call it surveillance, what you want to, whatever stuff that the rest of us used to go, no, that's not going on, that's illegal, it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, it couldn't possibly be happening. Well, it's happening now, and it's not a function of, you know, just stuff that you hear on Jeff Rentz or see, you know, on America Coast to Coast, along with the guy who wrote the time travel journals or whatever. This is real. And there is a hero out there. There is someone who is looking to make America what America could be, can be, and to a certain extent once was. Dateline Washington. Congressman Dennis Kucinich denounced the use of domestic spying as reported by the Wall Street Journal, saying the new policy is an infringement on American civil liberties. The new intelligence capabilities will give law enforcement officials and others the ability to view data obtained from satellite and aircraft sensors from the nation's vast network of spy satellites. The program, approved by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence and the Department of Homeland Security, will allow broader domestic use of secret overhead imagery, including seeing through cloud cover and penetrating buildings and underground bunkers. You know, because we've got so many underground bunkers here. Wait, just wait on that one, because I read that a few minutes before air, and had to struggle not to just break something. I am in no mood for this. I would look. There's a good chance I would shoot an ice cream salesman right now. Okay, I'm in a bad frame of mind. I'm grumpy. I'm hot and I'm cranky, and I want to just sit under a tree with a cold glass of lemonade with about a half a fifth of gin in it and make it all go away.
Do you want some wine with that cheese?
Shut up, Agnes. Turn the microphone off.
Fight me, Bob. Everything's just fine, and he's going to have to do the show, and there's plenty to talk about tonight. Don't pay any attention. He's just a little grumpy, but
pay no attention to the man behind the microphone.
That's right.
Hey, Agnes. You know what happened when the lights went out last night? Yeah, that. Guess what? Were you listening to what I was reading there? Your government watched us!
Maybe they'll pay for the Botox and the fanny tuck that I need then.
Oh, Jesus. The one night I am not up for Glenda the Good Witch, and I get her.
Oh, it's okay if they're spying on us. Maybe they'll give me a tummy tuck.
It will allow broader domestic use of secret overhead imagery, including seeing through cloud cover and penetrating buildings and underground bunkers. Agnes, we may never have sex again. The idea of Agent Fred sitting somewhere in a bunker underneath the NSA, mousing with one hand and God knows whatting with the other, is enough to just put me off forever. Because that's what we're talking about.
I had children. That didn't stop me. So just leave that there.
That is what we're talking about. I'm deadly serious. Including seeing through cloud cover and penetrating buildings and underground bunkers. Hell, the roof here is thin as rice paper as it is. You could just about see through it standing on a stepladder. Without a multi-million-dollar spy satellite. What has Agent Fred seen? Poor Agent Fred. I mean, God knows with, like, you know, the infrared night vision... The technology, Agnes and me, the two whitest people on planet Earth, probably glow like something out of freaking Scooby-Doo anyway. This new domestic spying program is against everything this country stands on, Kucinich said. The Bush administration's constant disdain for the Constitution has actively and systematically violated the civil liberties of American citizens, and this policy must be reversed. The administration has once again acted to violate our civil liberties and our trust by allowing domestic law enforcement agencies the ability to spy on American citizens using the intelligence capabilities previously reserved for our foreign intelligence objectives. Big Brother will now employ its most invasive and powerful intelligence tools, directly upon American citizens. Well, why the hell not? Because after all, as I have explained, not claimed, but explained on occasion after occasion after occasion, the Bush administration is more afraid of you and me sitting in our homes, minding our own business, but possibly carrying on conversations contrary to what they would prefer you talk about, than they are of anything some 6'6" Arab dude with a portable dialysis machine in a cave in Pakistan could ever, ever accomplish. Kucinich said the new domestic spying program is just another way the administration continues to ignore the Constitution, the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, expansion of the Foreign Intelligence Service Act, Guantanamo Bay, and Abu Ghraib have all resulted in attacks on civil liberties. This Orwellian policy is yet another example of the administration's continued desire to deliberately eliminate the constitutionally derived civil liberty rights from American citizens. The administration continues to dodge the Congress, the courts, and the American public to avoid any form of accountability. The administration needs to be held accountable for its full frontal assault on the Bill of Rights and our Constitution, Kucinich concluded. But, of course, he's not worthy of mention in the New York Times as a presidential candidate. For every one time that Dennis Kucinich's presidential candidacy gets mentioned, Hillary's gets mentioned 16 on average. I think that was the count from one story not too long back. In point of fact, Matthew Rothschild from The Progressive pointed out a couple of commentaries back, the New York Times entirely eliminated Dennis Kucinich from the presidential field in one of its recent stories. Never mind the fact that Dennis Kucinich has been right about the war. Never mind the fact that Dennis Kucinich has been right about trade. Never mind that Dennis Kucinich has been right from stem to stern about the nefarious nature of the Bush administration. Never mind that he has been absolutely 100% correct about every issue he has raised. And I'm not talking about opinion correct, I mean factually correct. As in, no argument about it. Never mind that 70% of the American people are on board with his ideas and waiting for Hillary or Obama or John Edwards or Little Lord Fauntleroy to enforce them. It's incredibly frustrating, and I have to... I have to wait for Dennis Kucinich to point out the assault on our liberties. God almighty, we're screwed. And you know what? Let me make something abundantly clear. Human beings being human beings, and Mark went down the religion garden path again this afternoon, and I understand why. It's a fascinating topic. We do have an animal nature, we humans. And that means that we are subject to making mischief. And you see, there used to be controls. There used to at least be the threat of law. There used to be the threat that a career staffer at the NSA dared not focus his Uber cameras on American couples or American citizens. Not because he realized it was wrong, because it's a very amoral job he was doing in the first place. But because he realized he would lose his civil service rating, or maybe his pension, or maybe get fired. All those checks are gone now. They're just gone. It's over. And I'm not going to sit here and go into particulars about the the intimacies that might take place or do take place or have taken place between Agnes and me. God knows we have to sneak around like a couple of teenagers just to keep the kids from catching up with us. And, you know, because God knows if they open the door, scarred for life. You know, thanks, sitting around the Thanksgiving dinner table 50 years from now when they're old people. Hey, remember when we saw Mom and Dad doing it? And they'll say, I'm scarred for life. Yeah. But it's not just us. It's you and whomever you love. It's you and whenever you and whomever love, love. Please understand, I am not exaggerating. You are now subject to the whim of the government and being watched by some voyeur in the basement of the National Security Administration, or the FBI, or the ABC, or the DEF, or the GHI. And I don't like it. I don't even like it. No, not even a little bit. And there's not a damn thing I can do about it. And whether it's intimacy with my lovely wife, or the matter of standing at the stove and trying to cook a meal, I am now subject, because of the Bush administration, to being watched like some sort of goddamn gorilla in a zoo. And I don't like it! When I'm having a moment trying to pass on fatherly information to my son, I'm subject in that moment of maximum familial piety, I am subject to being watched by some screw from the Bush administration. Does this bother you? Is this bothersome to you at all? Fundies, when you're on your knees praying in your church and you reach back to scratch your ass and you think nobody's watching, the guy you voted for is. Are we square on this? Second Amendment advocates, gun lovers, when you sneak out to do a little poaching because you want to get in there before the first day of deer season and you think nobody's watching, somebody is. Right? Yeah. Religious fundamentalists. You get to get away, you used to get away with hollering about all the demonic evil that the queers are doing. But now there's a camera that can see through your damn roof and they can see you getting it on. Brother. How does that make you feel? You know, there's another story out there that goes hand in hand with this. It comes out of Shreveport, Louisiana. Could martial law ever become a reality in America, the article asks. Some fear any nuclear, biological, or chemical attack on U.S. soil might trigger just that. KSLA News 12 has discovered that the clergy would help the government with potentially their biggest problem, us, you and me. And the writer then references Charlton Heston's now famous speech before the National Rifle Association at a convention back in 2000 will forever be remembered as a stirring moment for all Second Amendment advocates. At the end of his remarks, Heston held up his antique rifle over his antique head and told the crowd in his antique Moses-like antique voice, "Over my cold dead hands." while Heston, whose brain is now rotten, was then serving as the NRA president, made those remarks in response to calls for more gun control laws at the time. Those words live on. Heston's declaration captured a truly American value, an overarching desire to protect our freedoms. I call bug spray, because the NRA doesn't give a tinker's damn about amendments 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, et sec. They only care about one. They don't understand that they're all interlinked. But gun confiscation, this writer writes for KSLA News 12, gun confiscation is exactly what happened during the state of emergency following Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, along with forced relocation. U.S. troops also arrived, something far easier to do now, thanks to last year's elimination of the 1878 Posse Comitatus Act, which had forbade regular U.S. Army troops from policing on American soil. Well, it turns out, after all that blab, the heart of the matter is that the government has put together the clergy response team. And it references, the story does, Dr. Durrell Tuberville, who serves as chaplain for the Shreveport Fire Department and the Caddo Sheriff's Office. Caddo, isn't it? It's not Cato, it's Caddo. Tuberville said of the clergy team's mission, quote, "The primary thing that we say to anybody is, let's cooperate and get this thing over with, and then we'll settle the differences once the crisis is over." And these clergy response teams are spreading, apparently, or at least that seems to be the thrust of this article. In a lot of cases, these clergy would already be known in the neighborhoods in which they're helping to defuse that situation, says Sandy Davis. He serves as the director of the Caddo-Bossier Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness. For the clergy team, one of the biggest tools that they will have in helping calm the public down or to obey the law is the Bible itself, specifically Romans 13. Oh, Romans 13. Romans 13. Because the government is established by the Lord, you know. This is Dr. Tuberville. And that's what we believe in the Christian faith. That's what's stated in the Scripture. Jeff Farrell, the writer of this story, says civil rights advocates believe the amount of public cooperation during such a time of unrest may ultimately depend on how long they expect a suspension of rights might last. But the fact of the matter is, the government, the Bush administration, this is a top-down sort of thing that flows downward from Homeland Security and the White House. Bush, Homely Security Director Michael Chertoff, answers to the name Skeletor. They know that people are mightily afraid of the punishment to come, because people, by virtue of religion, have been taught to believe that they are inherently bad, especially Christians, so-called Christians, the people who use Christ's name but not Christ's spirit. So, don't be surprised at the next natural or unnatural disaster to see a bunch of gospel sharps walking around thumping on their Bibles trying to get people to give up their guns and go the hell home and die so that government can manage a martial law situation a little bit more efficiently. I suggested the other night to a caller that he go and watch, speaking of Charlton Heston, go and watch Soylent Green. You can all do that because, among other things, you'll see riot scenes where the cops just move in every day and shove people out of the way because everything's falling apart and everything's breaking down. Cameras on satellites that can see through rooftops and underground bunkers. Rest assured, they won't be looking in on the real criminals, because they've got this notion that you are the criminal. You're the dangerous ones. You're the ones that are out there listening to sedition and stuff that the Bush administration thinks is anti-American. It's hot. I'm cranky. But I'm cranky for a reason. I'm watching America die right in front of my eyes, and it seems that there is not a damn thing I can do about it. And I won't try to tell you how it feels. I have a pretty good idea that you feel the same. We'll take a break and come back. Your phone calls are welcome at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or if you've got your own long-distance dialing plan, 304-658-5453. If it's not going to cost you anything, you can save us a nickel. Jump in. I want to know how you feel. I want to know, not screw how you feel, I want to know what you think. Because this is a thinking radio network. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I walk along the city streets you used to walk along with me. And every step I take reminds me of just how.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs named their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed lesbian Bible study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, thou shalt not lie with a man, and so I don't, and so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to. Stand by your man.
Don't
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Before the hour, one of the creepiest rock and roll songs ever penned. Yeah, I know you've had it played for you. I didn't. That wasn't me. Okay. Let's go to the phones. Albert's calling from Wisconsin. Hey, Albert, how are you?
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Oh, you know, another day in paradise.
Isn't it? It's quite the ride we've been going on, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It seems like we're stuck in a loop, to me, anyway. Wow, what do you say?
I know. I feel like part of that old George Carlin gag about 18 people in Cleveland were subjected today to 15 hours of continuous whiplash when a man claiming to be the devil hijacked a roller coaster.
Yeah, I can certainly feel the whiplash as it speaks in my physical body, but it's sad. It's really seriously getting to this point now where, you know, Barack Obama is now talking just to pander to whatever security gaps that the general populace that believes in our
security, you know, moms,
yeah, and our and our freedom to choose, so to speak. He's sitting here over here talking about going into Pakistan. How Pakistan, that should be on the table, too. And
let's, you know, just put the world on the table, Albert.
Well, exactly. And this is the thing. I was actually speaking to one of my friends today about this. And he's like, well, you know, Obama did say go into Pakistan if they're harboring terrorists. And, you know, they are. I'm like, yeah, they are. But who do you think the ISI is? And who do you think put those people in there back in the day? Who do you think?
Yeah.
Us. That those are guys, the ISI.
Yeah, because we really don't want to use that harboring terrorists standard now, do we? Because thing you know...
Yeah, because, Bob, you know, listen, the Gibsons, all these guys, they're all here talking about how we need another unifying event, like another Pearl Harbor and another 9/11, because the country's lost its way. It doesn't have the fear... that's what I hear. When I hear them say these things, I hear, oh, you people in this country, you're not afraid anymore, and you need to be afraid. And that's why we need another attack to unite us in our grief. You know, I mean...
We're grief heads.
Yeah.
We're all junked on grief.
I think that's what Meacham, the former Labour MP over in England, said. I mean, he exposed it as well, and he said... Well, that's how they control you, is debt and fear. And if the stock market, you know, continual rumblings to the bottom, and that should cause some fear, and, you know, another attack would cause some fear, and the fact that China, you know, they're into us for how many trillion dollars now?
Or actually, we're into them.
Oh, exactly.
And yeah, they own our ass.
Yeah. Well, we only borrow $2 billion a day only. And yet our
infrastructure but hey, wait. There's good news, Albert. We've just signed a $30 billion military guns aid deal for Israel.
Oh, hey, there we go.
$3 billion in guns and bullets to blow away who for the next every year for the next 10 years. But we can't have universal health care.
Bob, in order to sustain, our parasitic way of life here on this planet, they have to prepare Israel for that, because that's where they're going to put the oil pipeline from Iraq, and they're going to run it through Israel.
Yeah, right through that long part of Jordan into Israel and out at maybe, what, Haifa?
Yeah, they're just going to annex that area if turn it into a DMZ or some baloney like that, and there we have it, and there's our pipeline, and then we can continue to, suck the resources and control the resources, and, while we should be looking for other ones. And it's just a sad cycle to hear my fellow left-leaning people talk about people like Hillary and talk about people like Obama and talk about people like this that are just simply, like Chomsky said, how the Democrats are kind of like the B-team for the A-team of the Republicans. When the Republicans get out of hand, they get a little too crazy, the B-team comes in and calms us down. It's like, and it might not have been that way 80 years ago, but it seems like today it is. It seems like today that there's no escape from it. It doesn't matter who the hell we vote for, because we're screwed this way, we're screwed that way. And the fact that, certain people that really are our best hope, those people aren't electable. And why aren't they electable?
Because I don't know why. Tell me, Albert, tell me, because I don't know. Where did this electability meme start?
That's what I'm sitting here right now puzzling. I don't understand that. I don't comprehend that. Elected is the person with the best ideas, the one you can trust, the one that you know in your heart is going to take us to the place that we need to be, or that we would like to see us go. And when you sit here and I understand it seems like the real extremists, and Kucinich is kind of in that, but like Gravel, like the guys that are the serious long shots in their parties, like Gravel and even Ron Paul, like those guys would say a couple of bits of truth and they got all this attention. Yet Denis Kucinich, maybe he's too short. I don't know. Maybe it is that he's so short that some people don't see him.
Well, let's see. It's the short. It's the hair. It's the ears. Mm-hmm. Has anybody noticed what a jug-eared lout is sitting in the White House right now?
But, Bob, don't you want to...
I mean, you could pick him up like LBJ picked up the Beagle, okay? I mean, Bush. Yeah. No, it drives me crazy, Albert. It does. Electability? I guess, what I said maybe a couple of months ago is true. Abraham Lincoln would be screwed today. Oh, he's tall and skinny, and he hasn't got a chin. Have you noticed he's chinless? He can't be president.
Yeah. Well, even would FDR, you're talking about these kinds of superficial things. I mean, would FDR get elected? He doesn't have a pretty wife.
Oh. Well, and look back, you want short? To the day he died, James Madison was referred to as Little Jimmy because he was practically a midget. I mean, he was tiny, and those weren't tall people. The average height, George Washington was tall because he was like 6 feet. I mean, he was a giant among men. We're talking about people who were 5'6", 5'8", tops, and James Madison was, 5'1", 5'2"?
Yeah.
He's not fit to be, the father of the Constitution would not be fit to be president of the United States in 2000,
Yeah. And then they wonder why we get sick of listening about Paris Hilton, about Lindsay Lohan and all this other nonsense. And I sit there and I can't walk by. I can't even buy groceries sometimes when I do shop at a regular store and I go to buy groceries. I can't sit there and shut my mouth and look at these stupid headlines and be like, and I actually confront anybody that's in the line or within earshot or that makes eye contact with me. I'm like, do you really care about this? Do you care about this? You care that, Bush and... Bush is having the alien baby with this. I mean, does this stuff that you care about? You care about who wore panties what night? You care about what drugs this one's doing and who's sleeping with who? How does this stuff matter? How does this stuff count in terms of making you feel better about your life? Or how does this fit into your worldview? And just the simple fact that our mainstream media is nothing more now than just some disgusting hideous, terrible example of one of these tabloids. It shows where we're at. It shows that it's almost it's futile. It's like the Borg, Bob. It's the Borg.
I know. So, you know, am I wasting my breath? Or is this like Fahrenheit 451, where we keep talking this stuff while everything goes to crap, but then once it's over, we're the repository and we remember the Republic? I'm beginning to think that that's the function of the horn. Keep talking about this stuff and create a haven for people to come and remember the vitality of the Republic, so that when the Republic can be brought back, that there's somebody who knows what it was.
Hey, that's why I love you.
Bless your heart.
I mean, we're literally sitting here. I do think that there are ripple effects in the consciousness. I mean, you can call me whatever you want, but that's fine with me. I believe in the consciousness, and I believe that in one way or another, that the horn and everybody who's involved with it, that listens to it, that contributes to it, and all the other stuff, that we send out these ripples and we touch other people, and those people touch other people, and hopefully, you know, like just the atoms smashing into each other, every other atom gets the feel for where every other atom is, and we can eventually somewhat get to this point where, like, and I think we are, and I really do, and I think we are, and I think even in a sense as, like, these people like Karl Rove and these disgusting, terrible examples of human beings will sit here and love an issue like 9/11 and all this other stuff because they feel that it gives them a power over us to control us and to make us, you know, accept things that we normally wouldn't ever accept. You know, and it's actually something that, you know, the pendulum swings one way, but it is going to swing another way. It's the law. It's the law of momentum. You can't go one way on an axis and not go back the other way. So I think what's going to happen is people see, holy crap, these people lie to us. Like it's like sand falling in a beach. There's so much lies. Look at this. We need some accountability here. And I think that's one of the reasons that Jon Stewart has the following he does. And I mean, we're sitting here looking at a whole populace starving for truth. And as being a repository for it, more and more people, and it's a slow process, but more and more people will eventually realize, hopefully. This is my hope, anyway. That's my hope for humanity, is that one day they will realize, wow, we really, really need to do something here.
Albert, if you get people talking, they'll come around, a lot of them will, to what we're talking about, but then you get to the hard part, and they want an answer. What is it we do to get it back? How do we fix it? And then we're in a fix, because then you have to start talking about campaign finance reform. You start talking about the elimination of lobbying money. You start talking about real political reform in this country, and their eyes glaze over.
Yeah.
You know, because we've been taught to look for the cheap answer, an easy answer, a simple answer, the way out. What happens every 2 to 4 years in this country? You know, vote for Bill Doberman. He'll bring family values to your district.
Yeah.
You know, that don't work.
Yeah. And then, that's what they do. I mean, that's one of the whole aspects of divide and conquer. You know, you either get them where they're, I mean, look at the education. The education system doesn't breed endurance for issues. It breeds, you know, instant. I mean, look at people when they want everything now. They got a pill for everything, and then they got a pill for the other pill, and the pill. I mean, there's so many pills, and everybody wants instant gratification, instant right now, painless. They want it as smooth as possible, and I think that's one of the things. Like nobody in this country. That's why they talk about sacrifice. Nobody in this country really. We shouldn't say that. There are a lot of us out here who do feel it, but in terms of the mainstream media reflecting it, and the mainstream media, which is where a lot of people, the normal people, will, like, that's how they get together, and that's how they actually they put their finger on that pulse. You know, at the same time, they got this, they have no foundation, so that's why they do. I mean, eventually my neighbors, you know, I mean, if people like that talk to me about the things that they talk about with me, if those kinds of people that surprise me, that they're actually saying something like, hey, you know, this is wrong, this is not right, that gives me hope. And I mean, we sit here and like, oh, the Democrats, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. What are they going to do? Nothing. They're going to sit here and they're going to let Iraq continue, and they're going to, I mean, they can either do one or two things. They should do, the only thing I'll give the Democrats is they plan on doing this. If they plan on taking us out of there militarily, because we do have to get out of there militarily, but instantly. They have to make sure that every Iraqi has water to drink and fresh water to drink. They should have these Iraqis having jobs, like rebuilding the infrastructure that we destroyed. See, I do believe, Bob, if we would have done things like that, like if they would have actually went in there and went into Iraq and done these things, then we would have a way better world. We would have we wouldn't have the crap we do now. But the thing is the right wing, what they want to do is they want to steal, and they want to have chaos, and they want all this stuff so they can control these resources. So geopolitically, the United States maintains its superpower dominance in the face of all this screaming debt we have and the dwindling resources that we may or may not have an answer to. I talk to a lot of friends that believe in the market and how the market is going to, don't worry about the dwindling oil supplies and the dwindling coal and how people are, more and more people, there's collapses because they're stressing these coal mines to the point of, there isn't any. They're trying to get yields out of them that are so great, they're moving, all this stuff, and then they wonder why there's no mine safety, because they don't have to have it, because they're eventually, I know we got a lot of coal, I do know that, and I know they want to do it, and in your region of the world, it's, what happens to coal is, like what happens out here with corn. It's the same kind of deal. So, we have all these resources, and we're going to sit here, and these guys are telling me that, don't worry, we'll handle it, we'll figure it out, we can have plasma induction fusion reactors and all this other stuff. Now, is that an answer, Bob? I don't know. I don't know if when we're sitting here with our dwindling resources and all this pollution and all this other stuff, is the fact that we're just holding out, a lot of my friends, even liberals, are holding out for us to have some sort of magic zero-point energy device.
Yeah, well, they're waiting. It's a legitimate school of thought, isn't it, Albert, that that if you just give science a chance, science will solve your problem. So there will be a technological fix. But, how long do you have to wait for it? When do we get the Philosopher's Stone? When do we get the universal solvent?
When we run out of oil.
Yeah. Right, and that somehow or another we have to be pressed to it, but there's layer upon layer upon layer of this. When we run out of oil, we don't just run out of oil for the cars.
No,
we run out of oil for everybody, because we're not good at being gradualists, if you know what I mean.
But us holding those resources is a good way for us to negotiate our debt with China, and I believe that is what they're doing. I believe that is why we're in Iraq, because we do understand that these resources are dwindling and that the really high-tech countries aren't going to be able to have these technologies immediately. But eventually, they're going to wind up having to be. But we want, just like they want, right now, the Republicans are trying to get rid of the equal opportunity laws, okay?
Yeah.
They're saying that they've served their purpose. Now, my friend, who's a manager of
That's like saying the 12th, 13th Amendment has served its purpose. There's no more slavery,
exactly.
So slavery doesn't have to be illegal anymore.
Yeah, precisely. Okay, they sit there and he's like, it doesn't matter anymore, and he's like, that's just going to screw them in the long run. And I kind of sat there and I scratched my head for a second. I'm like, how do you mean? I mean, you can't actually seriously believe that the people that now have all the power and then make laws so they have to share that power even less, are going to one day lose their footing with all that power, unless it is obviously, He's talking about, just the market. Eventually they would
There's insanity behind all of that, Albert, because, coal to liquids. Oh, we're going to run the Air Force on liquid coal. They've had an entire... They spent 2 days having a conference at a resort about 40 miles from here, and the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force got dragged in to be browbeaten with the idea that we need to turn coal into liquids. It takes 6 gallons of water to produce 1 gallon of liquid coal. Now, dig that. I mean, let that... And how many gallons does a jet fighter burn?
Oh.
on a sortie, goes out, goes out, bombs some civilians, and comes back. How many gallons? Well, multiply that by 6, and you'll see the water cost.
Which is another one of our major hurdles that we...
And after we've done that, it's wastewater. It's not good. It can't be consumed by humans. You can't run it through a faucet. You can't water your garden with it. It's dead water. And yet these people say, well, you know, the technology will save us, but we're not working on the technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Bush energy bill from a few years back had billions in there for oil-related technology. Oh, wait. Geothermal, here's a buck and a quarter. And we need a strict accounting.
Yeah, geothermal. I look at geothermal, especially in some areas, definitely.
Well, it's no good here because mining has destroyed any potential we have for geothermal, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, well.
But that's the way it is with mining. You know, it's like blowing out your veins when you're a junkie.
Yeah, it is, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That's a good way to look at it. I like that view. Yeah, and that's a view that hopefully, you know, more people can encompass in their heart and their head, and they can see, like, what we are actually doing, you know, and the larger picture in terms of a scale of time that, you know, is existent more than 6 months. I mean, I'm talking like, you know, and if we continue, I mean, it's almost like we're driving down the road and someone's in the back seat with their hands over our eyes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like that's what I think most people get through life.
Our nation is being guided by Toonsis the cat. Oh, God, that one just flashed in. Sorry, but... No, I mean, this business of the government can now use spy satellites to look through your ceiling.
Oh, just, yeah.
And you know, if I work, you know, I know me. If I work for the NSA, you know, there's going to be boring days. You know, you're not going to sit there and surveil a bunch of Christian right-wing extremists because, you know, they're our buddies. They're on the Bush administration's side. So, you know, you'll just fly over and you'll beam into a house and... You know, and then, hey, Ralph, come here. Look at these two people.
Well, they already do it. You didn't see that video on YouTube with the two Apache helicopter guys hovering, using their thermal imaging, looking at those two people consummating some sort of relationship in the backseat of a car. You never seen that one?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, they do it already. So I mean, and I remember that was
And that's not evil, nefarious evil. That's just plain old fashioned garden variety boredom.
Exactly. Well, who watches the Watchers? And that's
yeah.
Who watches the Watchers? And you know, you can't have the Watchers have accountability because they need secrecy to operate. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, they think they're doing some sort of zoology. I think that's how they look at it. They got some zoology patent in there with Bernanke and all these other.
Makes me want to paint a great big circle on my roof. With a hand holding up the middle finger, and paint NSA under it.
That's why you always say hi NSA every time you open you line on the phone. And that, but you see, and that's the sad thing. We're over here laughing about it, or kind of grimacing about it.
Oh, and this is gallows humor, though, Albert.
Yeah, I know it is. You need it. If you don't have it, you go crazy. But most people like, you know, Oh, they don't even know those issues. And that's why, we're going to vote for whoever we're going to vote, whoever they're going to tell us to vote for. Myself, personally, I'm not. I'd rather write in Pee Wee Herman or anybody. I don't care.
Oh, I'll probably play the monkey in the zoo game. Because, you know what, as bad as it is, and I don't know, Albert. It will be worse under Giuliani. It will be worse under President Dog on the Car. It'll be worse under President Manchurian Candidate than it will be under. I mean, you know, I don't like wishy washy. I'm reminded of that verse from Revelations where it says, "I would that you were hot or cold, but you're neither, and I will spit you out of my mouth." So you know, I'll probably walk into the booth and I'll vote for Hillary if she's nominated, or I'll vote for Obama, or I'll vote for Edwards. Because all of those are not as evil as. And I am reminded that when you choose the lesser of two evils, you are, of course, still choosing evil.
Thank you. I didn't even have to say it.
I know that. But you know, I do this consciously because I understand that my silence with regard to this, I couldn't stand getting up the morning after the election and seeing that drag queen Giuliani's the grinning evil mug on the TV, I'm gonna be your president. Yeah.
That, I'll tell you what, Bob. I'll tell you what, though. I just actually had this conversation a couple hours ago. And in that conversation, we talked about this very point. And we're sitting there and discussing it and saying, you know, maybe we should vote Republican this year. Because it doesn't seem to have gotten bad enough to make anybody actually get out of this seat. It doesn't seem like it's bad enough. And, you know, as much as I don't ever would rather, I lived in New York when Giuliani was mayor, so, I mean, and he's not one of my favorite people. The thing is I think the damage that he would do would maybe save the Republic. It's, in a sense, like almost...
Now, wait.
Almost like trying
wait,
to
wait. Now, I'm not, I don't want to be mean or anything, Albert, but do you honestly think that Giuliani could do something so evil that people would get off their asses and do something? They haven't done something through 8 years of the biggest, most evil jackass that's ever occupied the White House, George Bush. I mean, the thing that scares me about what you're saying, and I do understand its principles and its tenets, is that when we talk about things going from bad to worse, you know, there are real-world, real human being consequences to it. I mean, we're talking about, in order to make it get bad enough to get people off their asses, we're talking about a situation where people have to be dying en masse. Are we willing to commit to that, knowing full well that we might be part of the en masse that gets to do the dying?
And I've considered that, because I understand exactly where this is, and I have considered that myself, and I understand how it has some parallels to some other trains of thought that aren't quite the I guess most revered on Earth. But the slippery slope that I feel that we're on, especially when I look and I don't see change, Bob. I don't see change. I don't see anybody actually noticing or paying attention. I don't, like, 9/11 didn't do anything. It didn't impact the armor. All it did was, you know, slap the guardians around a little bit and shake the yoke and make these people sit here and go, oh, well, we need more defenses. We need more of this. We need more of that, without looking at the larger picture. Now, just like as in the Horn we were speaking on earlier, and how this is a, you know, a repository for the knowledge of the Republic, in a lot of ways, that impact of 9/11 woke up a lot of people as well. And now they're called truthers, and they're called all this other stuff, and they're called kooks and everything else. But however, it's still woken up a large mass of people, just like that nobody believes in the whole Kennedy issue. A lot of people eventually, by the time we hit 30 years, nobody's going to believe 9/11. And, you know, I know it's a thing, and I know I can get into it, but I'm not. But at the same time, we're sitting here looking at a world where we continually go into war. We continually blindly drive our lawnmowers to mow. We have driving lawnmowers. We're sitting here in an environmental, a resource crisis, okay? And this stuff is actually, this is important to the survival of the species. I mean, we got guys over here wanting, like, Obama. I couldn't vote for Obama. He's talking about nuclear war with Pakistan. I mean, because there's no way we could invade Pakistan militarily. They have 330 million people in that country. They have nuclear weapons. Okay, we're not going to ever invade them. But at the same time, I mean, you got to sit here and look at listen to the echoes that they're talking about. They're going to go into Iran. These people, Hillary, all these people, I can't vote for that. They want to go into Iran. That stuff's on the table. They can't go into Iran without invoking China. I mean, this is World War III they're talking about. And the sad thing is this World War III is World War I Part III. This is all the same deal. This is from World War I is why we're in the situation we're in now. And the thing is many people don't sit there and they don't even know it. They don't realize it. And we sit here and that's why I say it has to get worse. Or it's going to be so horrible, there won't be anything, there won't be anybody to survive it, Bob. I mean, we're talking about how many megatons. How many megatons of nuclear weapons do we have? And this is a thing that I remember as a kid, you know, thinking, oh, you know, I was by the Shoreham nuclear reactor, and all these people are against nuclear weapons and against nuclear everything. And I thought, oh, eventually then the Russians, and this is me as a kid, you know, how I grew, and I sat here and I looked at the world. You know, we sit here and see the Russian Empire collapse, and oh, great, now we can start dismantling these nuclear weapons, and I don't ever have to sit here and have that little fear that everybody had in the 50s and 60s.
Not...
Yeah, exactly. No, it's going to be nuclear weapon phase two, and now we're going to make new advanced nuclear weapons. But the thing is, the United States can have nuclear weapons that can, you know, just vaporize the third button on everyone's shirt. Okay, great. But everyone else has these old, yield, nasty, dirty, ugly. Russia has hundreds, thousands of them. China has probably 1,000 of them. I mean, Pakistan, a couple hundred. India, a couple hundred. Israel, who knows? Oh, they don't have them. South Africa, all these countries that are now nuclear, they're nuclear armed with nuclear weapons, and they have submarines, and they have all the mechanisms to deliver these things. If one goes off, they're all going off. They're all going off. And it won't be a world to live in anymore. And that's why I almost sit there and say, well, you know, and I understand that, you know, if you voted for a Republican, I'm not going to vote for a Republican, but if you voted for a Republican to make things worse, we would probably have that grim scenario of a radioactive fallout world. And that's, you know, Mad Max.
Well, you know, but I think you're talking about, Albert, is some sort of fatigue. And you know, I felt it too, where you just kind of go, oh, if they're going to do it. Quit screwing around. Get it over with. Because the waiting is worse than the happening. Is that kind of where you're, you know, if one goes off, they all go off. And I'm getting this sense of almost inevitability from you.
Well, and that's the kind of where let me extrapolate a little bit. I don't want it to happen.
Neither
but
do
the
I.
Thing is, and nobody does, and that's nobody except the ones that think they can survive it, I guess. But we're sitting here, and I don't want it to happen. And the thing is, I fear. That if one does happen, and if we do go towards that path of, well, unilaterality, you know, all these resources are ours, you know, we have unequivocal say over what happens in the world, and that's where we're leading. We have to maintain our strength without working together with people. And if we sit here and continue to go into this world, okay, of blindly sucking resources, plastic bags, plastic dish, everything's made out of oil, and we sit here and, you know, suck ourselves dry. When there are no resources left, and China has to come to the Middle East to take what is our debt today, okay? When they have to do this, and nuclear weapons go off, and all these people over here sitting here, that list options on the table. All they're doing is enabling this. And what I fear is if we continue to just bite our tongues and to try to bide our time, that we're going to run into a situation where that is inevitable. And it's not that it's a fatigue. It's the fact that if we don't do massive change now, there won't be any room to say anything later. I mean, we need Denis Kucinich. We need him.
It's critical at this point.
It is, and that's how I feel. And that's how I feel about it. I feel that we cannot, as Democrats, okay, as registered Democrats, we cannot sit here and go, oh. Yeah, okay, all right, we'll just let it, because what we're doing is we're letting the media, or whoever these powers are that tell us that Hillary Clinton is the one, or whoever, I don't even know where that comes from, all right, but they are the one, the talking heads that, you know,
Well, I know where it comes from, Albert, I know where it comes from. It started in 1992, okay?
Oh,
because,
yeah, exactly.
But it started with Rush. And the right-wing blatherheads, they started running Hillary Clinton for president at the same time Bill was running. And that's where that meme took off.
Yeah, oh, it did. And it hasn't stopped. And it's continued. Oh, health care. She doesn't want health care. She just wants to run for president. That's where we're at. And now we're sitting here, oh, well, now it's her time. And we're going to sit here. And this is another thing I fear. You talk about fear and not paying attention to Bush. Well, let's say Hillary does get it. Okay, let's say we all go along and we go with her, and, you know, whatever. Let's say she gets two terms, okay? Well, she gets two terms. Who's next? Jeb Bush?
Oh, no. She doesn't get two terms.
She's coming.
She doesn't get two terms. She gets one. She gets one, Albert, and she gets one because she is the Judas goat that the Republicans are going to saddle with the failure of Iraq. That's why the Bush administration has said that this war will continue until the next presidency. Okay, if they thought that there was any chance whatsoever that a Republican would be elected in 2008, they would be ending the war. Okay, but the only way that this makes any sense, and I keep hammering on it, you know, people keep going, "Oh, Bob, you're crazy."
Nope.
You saddle a Democratic president with Iraq. You spend 4 years saying that president, you know, Hillary lost the war. Okay, that's the way it works. Hillary lost the war. Hillary destroyed our military. We used to have a proud military under George Bush, but Hillary hates the troops, and she's destroyed our military's morale by losing the war. Okay? And then, in 2012, up steps Jebby.
Yeah.
This isn't about Giuliani. This isn't about McCain. This isn't about Romney. Oh, come on. Mitt Romney, for the love of God. That man could be president. Ouch. This is about making Jeb Bush president in 2012 because they know he couldn't run on his brother's heels because he'd be run out of town on a rail wearing tar and feathers for even trying. So you got to give the attention deficit disorder American people 4 years to get all wistful and nostalgic about W.
Like they do Reagan.
Right. And then you bring in Jebby in 2012 because that vile family, that repugnant, revolting gang of welfare queens who have never worked an honest day in their lives, the Bush family, they sit around and they talk about things like the presidency. I mentioned it, I said it the other night, as if it was some sort of daggum croquet game. It's Jebby's turn now.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jebby's the baby brother. It's Jebby's turn now.
These are the royalty. This is back to what we were talking about a little earlier. This is the royalty that we have. We have this, I mean, it's like a monocratic theocracy. I was watching, I picked up Escape from New York and Escape from L.A., both of them for $10. It's a good little deal to add to your library. But I was watching Escape from L.A., and yeah, I know the cheesy effects and this and this and this, but the first part of this movie, okay, he's talking about that there was a president that came up, and he's talking about how California, all the liberals, that's what that little symbology was there, how, oh, they're such sinners that they, you know, are going to bring God's wrath, and then that happens, and then he assumes president total. He becomes the dictator. He becomes the theocratic, you know, president for life.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, you sit here and look. I mean, we sit here. I mean, there's people that fear we won't get out of Bush. Because, you know, these people are the royalty. They are the ones that, you know, they trace their genetic
bloodline. This is the beginning.
The old royalty of old.
This is the beginning of empire. Okay?
Exactly.
This is the advent of empire. Julius Caesar had no son of his own. What's his name? Augustus. Octavian.
Adopted.
Octavian. He was his either nephew or grandnephew, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. All right. So he had no son to pass it on to. So his wife Livy's son Tiberius follows him.
Mm-hmm.
Tiberius had no son to pass it on to, so it winds up going to Caligula, who was the son of Germanicus. Caligula gets done in after he walks a horse into the Senate, and you wind up with his what they thought was his dotty, batty old uncle Claudius.
Mm-hmm.
And it is selected family relations.
Mm-hmm.
And they all called themselves Caesar. Well, you know what? I predicted a long time ago, and we won't be here to find out if I was right, but people can talk about what a guy I was. There will come a day, and I bet you that those drunken old Bushes have sat around over their Napoleon cognac and talked about the day when America will call the president the Bush. And Bush will become another word for Caesar.
And I have to agree with you, Bob. The only thing is I don't only count the Republicans involved with that. They're both. I mean, as
yeah, you see the Bush Clinton Bush Clinton Bush Clinton dance.
Not even Clinton, because Clinton really doesn't have the royalty in his line, in his bloodline. I think he's just a faithful servant. Gore. Gore's related to the Queen of England himself. I mean, him and Bush are cousins, or is it Kerry? One of them. They're cousins.
Kerry, yeah.
I mean, they're like, yeah, 12 degrees separation, but they're still related. And that's what I see. I mean, look at the Caesars and how they jumped around. It doesn't have to be my son. It could be my son or my cousin or my...
Yeah, Lord, Yorks and Lancasters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell you what, Albert, I've enjoyed this, but I got to stack up a calls I got to get at. Anytime, my friend, anytime. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe homework for next time. Has any democracy ever been restored?
All right. I'll go do some reading.
Might be worth it.
You take care.
All right. We'll see you, Albert. Later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Love my conversations with Albert. Let's go to Luke. Hey, Luke, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I tell you what, I'm sorry, whoever you were just talking to, I didn't get here at the beginning. But I'm sorry, when you want to walk us right up to the place where people are starting to play with nukes, I'm sorry, that's not how bad I want it to get.
You know what I mean? I know.
I'm sorry.
But I think one of the things he was pointing out, and like I said, I love my conversations with Albert because they go all over the place. One of the things he was pointing out is that Obama is out there talking nukes. And
the thing about Obama is Obama wants to, as I said, Obama is the second coming of Michael Dukakis. We all want to be friends. It's like, no, Michael, not right now. Maybe in the next term after this one, yes. But for the next 4 years, we need a Democrat who knows what the word Democrat means.
Yeah.
I don't want somebody who's a Democrat, I like Republicans. No, I want somebody who's a Union Democrat, you know, who's going to stand up and say, you know what, guess what? Remember that fellow FDR? I like his example. Let's follow it. You know, I don't want...
And
we'll get along with... No.
Don't want to go along. Don't want to get along. Tired of making nice.
But guess what? We're leading, you follow. Come on.
And, you know, there's one candidate out there running, Luke, that still has a union card, still pays union dues every year. Here's a hint. It ain't Obama.
I know. Well, let's get into some other stuff while we're talking about
it. Sure, go ahead.
The thing last night I was listening to, and it just got me. I'm sitting there going, isn't this amazing? Well, our government's going to protect us from terrorists. Hell, terrorists, protect us from the Chinese.
Yeah.
I mean, dear God, there ain't going to be nobody left. We're going to be poisoned to death at the rate we're going. You know, it's like, God, I mean, you know, I love these things. Well, if somebody didn't bring it up, we didn't need to be checking. It's like, hell, FDA, I can't think what it is. Consumer protection. Why aren't these people checking this stuff as it's coming in? I mean, do they?
Why does Dick Durbin?
Dolls made out of plutonium.
Why does Dick Durbin have to stand up in the Senate and say, you know, I think it would be a good idea for at least temporarily to check every painted thing that comes in from China?
Well, you know, it's like the thing back a while back, you know, when it was the thing about checking the ports, and they're like, we check 10%. I want you to check 110%.
Yeah.
So that's something worth it.
But
you know,
the toy thing, I was out long enough in the heat yesterday to hear one of the local blab fests out of Charleston, and it was so funny to hear one of these right-wingers saying, it was a moment of hive vindication, because this is one of those guys who said, you know, And in his rant, he said, now, we're as conservatives, we all understand that government is the problem. But I think we're seeing in China what happens when government completely disappears and business is allowed to run the show. We need some sort of regulation for the... And I'm sitting here thinking, I hope one of your kids is sitting there gnawing on a lead-painted toy right now, you ass. Because you're the problem. You're the problem, and he is, and they are. You know, sitting and there's. You know, I feel so sorry. Same guy. I feel so sorry for the folks at Toys R Us, because they're saying now that, you know, the Mattel toys are off the shelves, but people are picking up other toys and they're seeing made in China, and they're walking up to the salesperson and they're saying, "Well, is this toy safe? It comes from China." And the salesperson has to say, "Well, I hope so."
Well, you know, they were talking about the last couple of days, you know, this thing with the mortgage market, you know, and how this is affecting the stock market. I'm waiting for the Chinese stuff to start really cutting into them, you know. But the thing of it is, if you paid attention the last couple of days, I think it was the first of the week, you know, when they had this big drop, all of a sudden they said, well, we're pumping in money. It's like, well, what you're saying is you're faking everybody out to think everything's good.
Well, I got a story right here. I saw it just before I came on air, Luke, and it's one of those things that kind of makes my brain hurt. Here's the headline. Stocks storm back from huge losses. Okay. Now, we've had losses, big losses, for a week now, right?
Well, I think they said when it got to its lowest today, that the stock market had actually gotten down 10%. Which
right.
is a pretty good sized number when you think of it.
Yeah, it's a plenty big number. But this is the way they try to manipulate things, they, you know, the guys with the black hats and the black helicopters. Stocks storm back from huge losses. I read that and I'm like, have I lost my mind? I mean, do we have a 1,000-point day on the on Wall Street? And what I read is that down as much as 343 points, the Dow closes with a loss of just under 16 points. In other words, it went in the tank today and crawled feebly back to the to the edge of the beach.
All the big people with money said, "Oh, now we can buy what we want because it's dropped down. We're getting our bargains. Hallelujah."
So,
what I heard last night was funny. I was sitting there, I was watching Hardball. I watched Tweety Bird for a few minutes until my head started hurting. But he was talking about, well, they were just so shocked that the White House is going to write General Petraeus' report. And it's like, we've been saying this for 6 months. Where you been? You know?
They've been calculating Freedman units.
Oh, this too is true. It's another I saw he was on somewhere today, and it's like, anybody got the brains? Every time he's on, you know, the screen should go dark.
I know.
I was talking to Agnes about this last night. How far has CNN fallen?
In which regard?
Have on in the Paula Zahn hour?
No.
Rick Sanchez.
Really?
Boy, sports reporter.
Rick Sanchez, cub reporter,
well,
sure. Yeah.
Sports guy, he's doing well. Let's stick one of our sports guys on there.
Hey, at least it ain't Glenn Beck.
Well, this is true, but I mean, sometimes you're sitting there watching him, and I mean, since he's just doing sports, you know what I mean? It's like, God.
We give up. Yeah, that's just a great big white flag right up the pole there at CNN. We surrender.
Oh well, like we said, CNN's been going down the hole for a long, long time. Hopefully, they'll meet the guy in the little boat on their way down. You know.
Yeah. Can I have a lift? Yeah.
Yeah. But thing about Rove. Now, I say there's kind of a three-way bet going on right now. What it is. Okay, either he's going to wait till, you know, they're saying Fred the Snitch is going to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wondering, is he going to join Fred the Snitch's campaign? Because he really doesn't seem to fit with any of the others, I'd say, right now. I don't know how he'd fit in with Mitt and the magic underwear.
Well, some of his protégés have already bailed to respective campaigns. Mitt, some went to McCain. You know, the guy who did the Corker ads was on McCain's staff at one point. I don't know if he's one of those that got purged.
But who knows? There's so many people left the McCain thing, it's hard to tell anymore. Like I say, the McCain campaign is a ghost town.
Yeah.
But I agree with most of them. I think it's going to end up, he's going to go there and go down to Texas for 6 months and then roar back with the unprecedented swift voting of Hillary. You know what I mean? They're going to throw everything they can at her.
Or maybe he operates behind the scenes. Like I said, he's in a room
with little people out to all the other
yeah. Until I know that Karl Rove is in a room that doesn't have a phone, a cell phone, or a computer terminal, I'm not going to believe that he doesn't have any influence.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, he's moving out of the White House. What do you bet every morning? As soon as George gets up, the first thing he does is pick up the phone and hit the speed dial for one. Carl, what am I doing today?
Sure.
You know, it's like they said, Bush's brain is missing. And somebody said, it's taking you this long to figure that out?
Truly.
But, like I say, we'll just have to go along and see what comes down the road. But,
yeah, but it's always a matter of something, you know, something wicked this way comes.
Well, it's like we've always said, you know, when you think they can't do anything any stupider, wait a minute, yes, they can.
Sure they can. No, don't underestimate, don't challenge them.
It's like every time I turn around, there you turn around and you see Newt Gingrich come up out of his coffin, and it's like,
oh, now, hey, maybe there's where Karl Rove winds up.
Oh, please, Newt's the person who... I'd love to see what all the national polls are. You know, they always say, well, Hillary's got bad numbers. I was going, let's look at Newt's. You know, the one that got me the other morning was they were sitting there talking about Carl, and of course, NBC, guess who they had on? The Bookie of Virtues. You know.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Bennett. Bingo Billy.
Bingo Billy, like I say, The only thing I think it would be more honest if he would just wear the damn croupier hat. You know?
Yeah, with the little sleeve garters and yeah.
Uh huh. I always thought that's what he ought to send out as his picture. You know, it's like, be honest about it, Bill.
Or run a soundtrack behind him with the sort of electronic synthesizer generated one arm bandit music. You know.
Or, like I say, the sound of the roulette wheel. You know, oh, God. So, like I say, some of these people, you're just kind of sitting there going, what? You know. Oh, I saw the thing today where they were talking about Padilla was convicted.
Yeah.
And then somebody ran the article, and I saw it where somebody was talking about it, said, oh, by the way, they were talking about Crisco John, and they were bringing up some of his history. Hallelujah. Somebody actually remembered it. They said, isn't this the same Padilla who they had in custody for like 6 weeks? And they trotted him out, amazingly enough, right after the day after Miss Rowley made her little testimony before Congress. And it's when Crisco John made his Moscow speech.
Yeah, and the we have caught a dirty bomber. I remember it very well.
And it turned out later on, yeah, we've had him over a month in custody. But amazingly enough, we had to get John Ashcroft on a video feed from Moscow to announce it the next day after Cynthia Rowley blew the FBI out of the water, saying, oh, yeah, if they'd given me a warrant, we might have been able to stop 9/11 before it happened.
Yeah, the Phoenix letter, the Phoenix memo.
So, you know, I mean, like I say, when you see these stories, folks, you'll go back and open it up and see where that story came from. You'll see what all the history of it is, because there's stuff that...
Yeah, don't look at it, look around it.
Yeah, and lift up the curtain, see the man standing back there moving the switches and the dials, and go, hello, Uncle Dick, what's going on?
Oh, have you seen that video, by the way, the Kucinich Peace Man versus the Peace Man versus the Chenguin?
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Go to YouTube and just search the word Chenguin, Chenguin. It's a fun video.
Sounds like it. Oh, well, I tell you what, I'll let you get on, but I know you got other people stacked up, so y'all have a good evening.
All right, thanks, Luke. You too.
We'll put our feet in some cold water right here, I tell you.
Yeah, and just, well, I don't know.
We had 101 today. Oh, joy.
Yeah, so did we.
Well, if you call the family in Alabama, how's life down there?
It ain't good.
Yeah.
It is not
good.
Well,
maybe this will break soon. I think
the pavement's going to start melting down there pretty soon.
Later,
Luke.
Bye.
Bye now. And David, calling from Maine. Here we go. I just blew through the news, didn't I? Yeah, I did. David, what's up?
Good evening, Bob. I'm sorry to hear that you blew through the news.
No, I did. I didn't even realize it. See, that's what happens when the conversation gets really cooking along.
Yeah,
I forget
understand.
Stuff.
I'm going to open up with a quote from a show called The Wire.
All right.
On HBO. There's this part where Dee Barksdale, one of the new dealers, comes in the door, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's the money counters. And the money counters is like, wow, man, you're moving a lot of product on the streets. And he's like, yeah, what are you doing? He goes, you got those guys humming, huh? And he's like, yeah, I got them humming. And they're counting the money. And he's like, I just can't wait till that new product hits the street. The counter looks right up at him, and he goes, product? What new product? We're just going to put that thing in a new gel cap with maybe put some caffeine in it. And you know what's funny? The weaker it gets, the more it will sell. And that is exactly where we're at. The weaker things get, the more people will buy into it.
Yeah.
Put it into a different gel cap.
Oh, yeah.
Bam.
Yeah, just call you. Yeah. It's not Blue Thunder anymore. It's Midnight Lightning.
Don't even worry about it. Just keep diluting it. Different color.
And the American people will go, it's new and improved.
Right, but I do disagree with you about them running Jeb in 2012. That ain't going to happen.
That's going to happen, I tell you.
No, it's not. And I'm tell you why it's not going to happen. Because the family is so stigmatized. They're already thinking they're going to have to move it back a few more years. You're going to see. That's the way it works, man. They're not going to run him after 4 years. Ain't going to be able to do it.
Well, who are they setting up for 12 then?
I don't know. That's a good question. But you know what it's probably going to be? The rise of the theocratic revolution in a way we've never imagined before, probably. If you think about it, that's probably, I mean, how long have they been underground? And now they're starting to surface. They're in our administration. You know, Alejandro Jodorowsky, a famous surrealist director and a writer, says that the rise of the next leader, he said this in 98, 99, show you how ahead of his time he was, will be a techno priest. And what that means is everything under technology and the dollar and the business will be the new religion. And that's your example of a techno priest. Right now we have kind of like techno clergymen, if you think about it. We got Bill Gates. We got Steve Jobs. Even these people start dressing like clergymen. They're becoming more with tunics and more just the podiums, everything.
I think we've already...
We are on the edge of a techno priest.
No, I understand what you're getting at, but I think we're already there to a certain extent because the lawyer class is our secular priesthood, David.
In some respects, I agree with you, but I think it's where technology is coming into play, where that is the new... where that'll be the complete religion. If you look around the world, everything is completely immersed under one grid. I have a serious question for you, Bob. How do you know what's real anymore?
It's not a new question. I mean, it's one of the oldest.
I know, but how do you know what's real anymore? Is what I'm saying.
I don't. Right. I don't know beyond the fact that I can reach over here and pinch Agnes and she will slap the snot out of me for doing it. You know, I know that's real.
Oh yeah.
You know that's real.
Yeah.
How do you know it's not a simulation of a simulation of a simulation, like Baudrillard said?
No. See, a simulation can't swear like Agnes can swear.
Okay. All right. Well, here's my point about why I bring that up. I think a lot of people are investing too much emotional stress. I really feel for a lot of people in this respect. A lot of emotional stress. When you really think about the world, see, this is a thing that people don't even realize. When you really think about the world, that's why I suggested you to watch Waking Life, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about the world and what you want in the world, it's there. It may not be there in front of you, but it's there. What is the difference between protons and electrons racing in the outer world than the protons and the electrons and the neurons racing in your mind? What is the difference?
Oh, I understand what you're getting at. Believe me, I do.
I know. A lot of people focus too much on what I'm saying on the outer. And I believe that inadvertently, when the consciousness is raised and all of that, it comes to fruition faster and faster and faster. The more I hear about what William Cooper was saying, Alex Jones went on the radio, and he kept saying it over and over and over again. You look at what Rove said. He says, we got to have a permanent majority. We got to have a permanent majority. It's like an incantation. So all of these people, I believe, they're manifesting and bringing to fruition by placing those fears and subconsciousness and projecting them outwards. That's what I believe is happening. It's the same thing what I believe is happening with the natural cataclysmic events. Where someone goes, oh, a tsunami's coming. Now, people can think I'm crazy, but we have shamans chanting and canting spells right now as we speak with the prayer wheels and everything. And it's constant.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, if we keep putting these things out there, yes, a tsunami is going to come sooner than later. Yes, we are going to have a permanent majority of Republicans. Yes, we are going to have them in jackboots. Do you want them to be cannibals too, with laser?
You mean but we will create our reality by virtue of the reality that we're casting forward.
I believe that is physically what is happening. More and more, I think about it, because I just think it, exactly. You know, if you want to look at it, Rove is like the an evil Merlin, if you will.
Yeah,
he's a malicious Merlin, and the problem I have with most of my fellow peers and people who think like me is people focus so much on the negative. They mention it over and over and over again, and there's never that light where, like, Well, what else do you think about? What else is there? I mean, do you see a? What is it that you can bring out of this that you see for the future of the world? And I never hear that. I just hear constant focus on Rove. I hear a constant focus on Giuliani. I hear just constant this. And it's no wonder the world's like this.
Because
I really do believe
it becomes Rove. Because people are making self-fulfilling prophecies. Is
right,
what yeah.
Right. And it's that incantation, that belief, that drive, and that's why there's all this confusion. You want to know something, Bob? Really? Collective individualism, even though it's an oxymoron, collective individualism is a nasty, nasty bitch. It really is, because everyone wants something to happen at once, and it's all utter chaos coming colliding at once.
Okay, I have to back up and take a little bit of issue with you, though.
Yeah.
If that was the case, wouldn't all these millions of fundamentalists saying, "Come, Lord Jesus, come in the clouds"?
But Bob, if you can bring the fruition to something, nobody says when it's going to come. That could still happen. That's the belief that they have. It could happen. When they see a mushroom cloud, maybe they'll call that Jesus. Who's to say they're wrong? If they believe that. I think that the more and more people who incant with their own little spells that they have, the more and more that they do this, the more and more power they collectively bring themselves. You know, it's kind of like what Carlos Castaneda said in his books when he was studying under Don Juan. A lot of people criticized him. They said, "There is no Don Juan, Carlos. There is none. He's not there." And Carlos would answer them, he would say, "Well, how do you know?" And he goes, "Because it doesn't sound like there is one. That's nonsense." And he's like, "Well, some people, they believe it." And they would say, but there is none. It's nonsense. It doesn't exist. It doesn't matter." And they says, and then again he asked, "Well, how do you know?" And you really don't know. But the point is that everything that's happening right now, collectively, I see it more and more. A lot of people projecting their fears at will, and they're becoming reality. Look.
Individually, they do.
Look what happened with Peru today, right?
Yeah.
We have, I think, 18 people dead or something? 18 people dead. We were this close to a tsunami, they're saying. This close. How much... When people thinking that, oh my God, there's a tsunami that's going to happen. There's a tsunami that's going to happen. How much collective mind energy and mental power do you think could bring across a tsunami? If they want it to happen, well, they don't want it to happen, but they think it's going to happen.
People fearing things into existence.
Right, and it's the same thing. I mean, you can do it with the experiment.
Well, I think I understand a lot of what you're saying, David. But I think there's a sort of a tangent to it as well. If I go out and I buy a blue Buick tomorrow,
right?
All of a sudden, as I go up and down the road, it's going to look like there's all I'm going to see are blue Buicks. Okay, because I'm sensitized to it. I mean, I remember when this happened. We had a blue Ford Taurus station wagon, and the next thing I knew, it seemed like there were nothing but Taurus station wagons on the road.
You know, Bob,
it was what I was sensitized to.
Right. Well, all I can say is this: is that
I mean, people fear. You know, 9/11 happened. Okay, and we're not going to do that. But 9/11 happened, and all of a sudden, people start seeing more Muslims. An otherwise invisible community of people inside the United States suddenly rise to visibility.
Right.
It's not because they just appeared, but it's because the people doing the perceiving decided to notice them.
It makes you wonder who made Bin Laden.
We made Bin Laden.
Yeah, I mean, who thought him up, though? If he does exist. I mean, I've never heard... You know, that's the interesting thing, Bob. I've never seen the Bin Laden family on the Barbara Walters story. Barbara Walters special. I never saw him.
And if it ain't on Barbara Walters...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've never heard somebody say, Well, wait a minute. You know how in an investigative case or a case where you talk to the relatives, people who knew the Mansons, they did that. They talked to different people. They were like, I'm not saying that Bin Laden is like Manson or anything because, you know. But what I am saying is these cult of personality type figures, it just strikes me as odd that nobody is has that kind of curiosity to talk to these people, talk to the family members or anything like that. Schedule an interview, go over to Saudi Arabia and say, hey, I mean, I believe the BBC did it sometimes, but over here it seems like it's a fog. It's a constant fog, like they're really.
Well, we do live in a fog. There's no getting around that. It's a media fog. I made the reference to Fahrenheit 451 an hour or so ago, and I remember the fireman's wife. She has televisions on every wall of her living room, and she doesn't watch the shows so much as she lives inside them. Okay. And she doesn't want to go outside, and she doesn't understand why he'd want to. She wanted, you know, her reality is made for her. There's no, right. There's no need for her to go. You know, the old phrase that came with the early days of television: "Don't touch that dial." They're very serious about that, David.
But you know, Bob, at the same token, I think another thing that we really did that we damaged ourselves, or was we put one in the negative column. Was we made too much America and too much of the modern world. We extracted the madness, if you will. We try to take it away like it doesn't exist. Like we're not on the mouth of madness when we're alive. And I think that's a problem because it creeps up around you eventually. You get to that point of being in the mouth of madness again. Which is exactly what's happening. We're this close to a tsunami. It's like what you said about the marketplace. Who was willing the marketplace to go back up again? It would be interesting to know who owns what in the marketplace. Who developed this the kind of technology for the streamers and the statistics and all of that? Because I think that's all interconnected too.
Sure it is, and Rupert Murdoch owns the Wall Street Journal. What else is he? What else are we going to find out that he owns now that he's purchased it?
I leave you with another quote from The Wire before I go.
All right.
The wife says to the police, the guy in charge of the investigation, goes, "Why are you stressing yourself out over this?" She goes, "If you do this, you're screwed. If you don't, you're screwed." And she goes, "So why play the game? It's rigged anyway." And then that was the end of the scene.
It's rigged anyway. Well, I don't. But
before I go,
but David,
I
David, if I wait, if I buy into that,
yeah,
we're just wasting our time.
No.
You sit back and wait for the guy to come with the gun and put it in behind the ear and.
No, don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the conversations that everyone has, it's important. We're passing information, whether it's subconsciously, or we're passing them consciously, subtly or unsubtly. We're passing energy back and forth that we all need as beings right now. And what I'm saying to people is, don't get so focused on what's happening outside. Focus on what's just start to realize what's happening on inside. Every year, you become basically a new being of cells of DNA of just everything racing around you.
Yeah.
Take what you're learning from here. Have that open up your mind and whatever you can bring to fruition in a positive light. Be grateful for that, but don't be discouraged because you haven't automatically transformed the world of flowers and sunshine and Care Bears.
Especially the Care Bears.
Yeah, and one last thing before I go.
I'm not making light of what you're saying. I understand what you're saying.
I know. I think it's important for people to realize that, though, that maybe, just maybe, the reason why we're talking is not for the changes outside. It's for the changes inside first.
Well, yeah. What's the old saying? Move your ass, your head will follow.
free your ass.
Yeah, free your ass, your head will follow.
Yeah, and your mind will follow. Or think it ain't illegal yet.
Yeah.
I'll have to check on that. But before I go, one last thing.
Yeah.
I heard. I don't know if it's true, Bob, but you got to look into it. I heard that Chris Matthews, they altered the applause. Instead of saying ooh, they said boo. Not making this up. I heard this on Stacey Taylor today, subbing in for Randy Rhoads.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if you could look into that, where they actually changed the boo into an ooh, or where they changed the ooh into a boo, rather. One letter, O to a B, to make it look like this crowd was not feeling this John Edwards.
Wouldn't.
I don't know what to say, Bob, but you know what? I believe it. I believe it now.
Well, you know, compare the audio to the transcript, and that ought to be fairly simple, shouldn't it?
And all I have to say is, before everyone, just realize what you're thinking, what you're feeling, that's important. And if that helps you in your day, in your inner self, don't worry so much about the outer, because you might be surprised in the end of what's to come, when that door opens or whatever.
Yeah. True enough. Thanks, David.
All right, Bob, later.
Have a good evening, and thanks for waiting. I appreciate it. And, Bob. Just a second. Our good friend Benedict at Large calling. Hey, Benedict.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. You?
Oh, not too bad. I need a little time to get my thoughts out. I was listening to a caller into Tom Hartman's program. His name was, quote-unquote, Steve. And he said, I'm calling in under a false name because I'm a whistleblower. And he was whistleblowing for National Health Care.
Mm-hmm.
So he started out by saying, I had my friend here, and he was a whistleblower, and I saw what they did to him. This is why he came in under a false name. But he eventually went around to you need to take better care of yourself. I mean, kind of the Republican line, if you will. We need to be responsible for our own health care. We have to do the right things for us. And what he used is this, and this is why I knew that he was an insider. He had the figures about people with diabetes and how they tend not to take care of themselves in the way that they must. And I was thinking about that. And I wanted to follow up on that thought, because so many people with diabetes don't take care of themselves like they should. And the Republican talking point, of course, is why should we pay if you're not going to be a responsible adult?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about it, and I said to myself, okay, let's say I'm Bob Kincaid number two, and I'm married to a wonderful wife named Alice Kincaid number two. Okay, and one day I go for my annual checkup, and I get told I have diabetes. Okay, well, that's really serious. Well, what do I need to do? Well, you'll need to come in every 3 months, and once a year you'll need this whole thing of tests. And here's all this literature, because you have to change your diet. So here's like a, you know, 20-page book about how I have to change my diet. Okay. So wow, yeah, that can kill me. What am I going to do? I'm going to start to do it. So I start off on it, and I read into this book, and of course the first thing I find is that I'm spending a lot more on food for me. Now I'm like Bob Kincaid, number one. I want my kids to go to college. Mm-hmm. I want them to do better than I did. And you know, I'm struggling for my pennies to put there. And all of a sudden, I'm saying, maybe I can't put as much for my kids as I want to. But I'm going to do it because I really need to see them graduate. And I do that for a couple of months, and then I get the medical bill. And I look at the medical bill, and, wow, this is my $500 deductible, and there's $1,000 worth of copayments, and there's those three lines on there where, well, we don't cover these things. And so I look, and all of a sudden I'm faced with, you know, $2,500
mm-hmm.
that I didn't plan for. But I have to pay it because I'm a good person like you. I have to pay it. So I pay it. And, you know, I go in for my every 3 month checks, and all of a sudden I'm starting to find out that, you know, I've filled my deductible, but my copays are real tough. And there's those not covered. And I can't pay them. I can't pay them while I keep putting the money in for my kids to go to college and to live the American dream that I want for them,
mm-hmm.
to be better than I was, which is every parent's dream. And it goes on for a while, and then you get around, you cycle through the next year, and there's that $500 deductible you couldn't manage, the copays, the not pays. And you've caught that $500 deductible. And eventually, I don't know, you have to look and say, hey, wait a minute. What's more important? Do I live to see my kid toss the tassel from the left side to the right of their square cap? Or do I make sure, just make sure, that he gets that, he or she gets the chance to do that? What's more important? And you say, I give up. I can't pay the medicals. I can't pay the increased food costs that I need for a proper diet. So I will just give it all up. I will let it go and hope to hell I can watch my kids graduate.
Yeah.
If I can't, at least I let them graduate.
Yeah, you hope.
Yeah, you hope. You hope. But it's more important that I do. To you, and
well, sure. I mean, as I was frequently reminded, once Agnes and my kids were born, my dad would look at us and say, "Listen, you don't matter anymore. You're old hat. The news is the kids. They matter
mm-hmm.
because they are now the latest generation."
I've never had kids, Boz, but I don't know. I don't know. Somehow. Later, I mean, I'm 56 now. Somehow, all I think about is kids. I've never had any. And people say I miss that, and I'm sure I do. But I've never had any. But suddenly, it's like all I care about. And I'm thinking, what would, okay, let's say Bob number one, you, instead of
yeah.
Bob number two, me. Let's say that you go to your annual visit that you have to scrimp, you know, and get the money for to do. Let's say you go and somebody says, you have diabetes, Bob. I'm pretty glad you know, but let's say it happens. I mean,
oh, they've already told me I'm on the road.
I'm probably on the road to a lot of things. I drink way too much, you know. But here's my point. This guy, this Steve guy, who couldn't even say his name
mm-hmm.
when talking to Hartman. He was saying personal responsibility, and not in the Republican fashion, but personal responsibility. You have to help us out because if you get diabetes, damn, you're going to be expensive as hell for us. I mean, this guy was just being honest about it.
Yeah.
And
but the problem, though, Benedict, is that
That's a short-sighted. I mean, yeah, it's expensive. You know what's cheaper? What's cheaper is to stop giving corporate welfare to the companies that are helping to create the diabetic situation. Diabetes has.
And all the corn syrup and all that kind of crap that might be screwing everything up. But here was my thought, because the Republicans always come up and say, I don't want to pay for somebody else's irresponsibility.
And
you know what? To tell the truth, and you and I have to say, they have a point. They have a point. It's not a good one, but it is a point.
Yeah, but they've got a point from a very, very...
From a very
mean-assed libertarian perspective, they've got a point. But you know that opens the door for me to say, I don't want to pay for the irresponsibility of a guy who starts wars with countries that aren't doing anything to us.
It does. But here's the thing. We need to defeat that point that they have, because I mean, as small as it is, it's legitimate. We need to defeat it. And here's my idea. You stop taking care of yourself. Bob number one,
mm-hmm.
gets diabetes. And he stops taking care of himself because, damn it, he can't put his kids through college if he has to eat that more expensive diet, if he has to go in for all of his medical treatments every year. And he just stops doing it because the best thing in Bob number one's world is to have his children toss that tassel across the top of that hat. You stop doing it, okay? Now, your medical bills go through the roof. Now, what if your medical bills are free? I mean, not free. I mean, it's all paid for by taxes. We understand that. But what if this is all free? And the only thing you have to think about, it's changing your diet to a more healthy fashion where you don't have to worry about whether you'll be there to see that Tesla get not tossed over. What if that was the case? You're not only a lot cheaper on all of us. Your kids are loving it. Everything works right.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, I'm not one of these people, Benedict, who believes that all profit is evil. There are places where making a profit is perfectly normal, and it is perfectly reasonable, and it's the way to get things done. But there's a certain morality to making a profit off the illness of human beings. You know, turn on a television and see how.
No. There is not a certain morality for doing that. There is no morality for doing that.
But turn on the TV, Benedict. And wait and see how long it takes before you see an ad with Wilford Brimley in it hustling diabetes supplies from Liberty Medical.
I know.
Okay? We have turned... this thing has a...
Yeah.
This thing has legs.
We have built ourselves a system where illness is profitable. Wellness is not. We don't treat wellness. We treat illness. And that's the system we've built.
Yeah.
And that,
if you
that
could
is,
look, if you could, if you could, if you could patent vitamins,
they would.
They would, and vitamins would be more expensive than they are, and vitamins would be prescribed. All over Europe, it is.
They're trying to do that, by the way.
I know. But all over Europe, for instance, it is practically medical malpractice not to tell a person with hyperlipidemia. Hypercholesterolemia, high cholesterol. It's practically malpractice not to put them on fish oil.
I've got fish oil right next to me. But you've seen Michael Moore, where the doctor in England is saying, oh, they pay me extra if I get people to quit smoking. In other words, if I increase the well-being of my patients in that preventative matter, I get paid extra.
I know, and it makes sense. But we're not that. But look, Benedict, that's part of the problem. We are a psychotic nation. All right? Mm-hmm. On the one hand, we're going to pay for the children's health care program with an extra dollar a pack on cigarettes, which means that I can't quit because I want to see children have adequate health care. So I got to keep smoking.
That's a real screwy idea, isn't it?
But and then the government turns around and says, Jesus, everybody's got to quit smoking because smoking's bad and it raises health care costs and yada, yada, yada. And then on the third step of this insane little troika, they turn around and we've got farm subsidies so people can keep growing tobacco.
Yeah.
This is a psychotic nation.
Yeah. Well, no. It's to quote Greg Pelos, it's the best democracy money can buy.
Which means no democracy at all. It's sort of a representation of the Hobson's choice.
It's
the horse by the door or no horse at all.
Dollars for votes.
Yeah. Sure.
I hate it, Bob. I work my butt off to do whatever I can, and I mean, I don't know what to do more, but I'm not feeling very effective these days. I'm really not, I'm very disappointed in things, and I love what you're doing, and I know you are giving of yourself in a very big way, for everything. I love what you're doing. I am totally frustrated, and
you're manifesting the frustration of a whole lot of people, Benedict. You are.
I know that.
And that's
all,
you know,
I'm trying to do these days is just talk to people and say, keep going. Don't ask me how you keep going, but just keep going, because we'll win this. We'll win this, and I don't even know if that's true, but I sure hope so.
I do too. And if you cannot win, if you do not play, you buy your ticket, you take your ride.
Right. Yep. You can't make a buck if you don't roll the dice.
That's right. Benedict, you take care, my friend.
I love you, Bob. Thank you.
All right. Bye now. We're at the top of the hour. I'm not going to bag the news this time. I have filibobstered long enough that I've got to refill the water jug. Okay. On the other hand, you're welcome to continue. Yeah, okay, Agnes is going to refill the water jug because I can't get out of my workstation here. But anyway, jump on in. Join the conversation. 877-443-2366 or on your nickel, 304-658-5453. This is America's liberal voice. This just may be America's hope. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Is it too much to ask? I want a comfortable bed that won't hurt my back. Food to fill me up and warm clothes and all that stuff. Shouldn't I have this? Shouldn't I have this? Shouldn't I have all of this? Passionate kisses. Passionate kisses. Whoa, whoa. Passionate kisses.
This is the Quality News Network. Stocks plummeted worldwide as they did on Wall Street today. The Dow dipped 340 points during trading. We'll have the latest numbers coming up in our business block. Peru's civil defense agency says at least 450 people were killed due to yesterday's powerful earthquake southeast of Lima. They say that number will most definitely climb. There have been at least 15 aftershocks, some as strong as 6.3. The quake itself was upgraded today to an 8.0 magnitude and shook the area for 2 minutes. Rescue workers at the collapsed Utah mine picked up sounds deep in the earth using two geophones, but they say it may not be their missing colleagues. Crews have been working for 10 days to try and reach the trapped men. In Minnesota, rescuers have found human remains in two of four cars taken out of the wreckage of the I-35 West Bridge collapse. Two people are still listed as missing. The death toll now stands at 11. In Miami, a guilty verdict on all three counts was reached in the trial of Jose Padilla, who was charged with supporting Al-Qaeda. Two co-defendants were also found guilty. The White House has approved a plan to expand domestic spying with the use of satellites and aircraft sensors. This technology was previously restricted to mainly foreign surveillance. The Bush administration says it will be used to combat illegal immigration, natural disasters, and terrorism threats. The U.S. will give Israel $30 billion in military aid over the next 10 years, which is a 25% increase. Opponents of Venezuelan leader Hugo Chavez say he's edging his nation closer to dictatorship. Chavez yesterday proposed to end limits on re-election. Search and rescue missions continue for three U.S. Navy sailors missing off the North Carolina coast. Their Navy plane crashed during exercises last night. Residents of the Caribbean islands are preparing for Hurricane Dean, a possible Category 4 hurricane, which could bring 90-mile-an-hour winds. Tropical Storm Aaron hit Texas about 25 miles northeast of Corpus Christi. The storm was downgraded to a tropical depression, but has prompted flash flood watches in 33 counties. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next.
Have you ever found yourself swatting at a fly no one else sees? Chances are you're seeing what we commonly call a floater. Many people have them and have had them for a while. Floaters are condensed proteins located in the gel-like part of our eyes called the vitreous. As we age, this gel becomes more liquefied, and so whatever debris was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on Eye Care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
NASA may decide by this evening how to fix a 3-inch gash in the Space Shuttle Endeavour's heat shield, which occurred after liftoff last week. A new study by Columbia University's National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse finds that high school drug use is getting worse. 61% of teenagers now say they go to schools where there is a drug problem. That's up from 44% who responded that way in 2002. The FDA is warning that children under age 2 should not be given over-the-counter cold medications unless a doctor has ordered it. The FDA is reviewing the drug's safety. The Commerce Department reports that new home construction in July dropped to the lowest level in more than a decade. It fell 6.1% last month. Countrywide, the nation's largest mortgage lender announced it had to borrow $11.5 billion. The leading credit ratings agency, Moody's, may downgrade the company's debt rating to junk status. So far this year, Countrywide has lost 60% of its market value. The Federal Reserve, meanwhile, put $17 billion into the banking system today. Light sweet crude is trading down $2.33 at $71. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 16 points at 12,845. The NASDAQ ended down 8 points, and the S&P closed up 5 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I should have paid better attention in econ class way back when. The Fed pumped $17 billion into the market today. When it says the Fed pumped $17 billion into the market, whose name is on pay to the order of on the check? I know I'm oversimplifying, but that's my job as Bob Kincaid. But who, you know, this is that part of the Abbott and Costello routine where, in an effort to find out, you know, where Lou finally says, "Okay, on payday, whose wife goes to pick up the check?" Absolutely. And whose wife gets the money? Every penny of it.
This is that. I'm not trying to be a smartass here. Who got the $17 billion? I mean, was it written to Dow Jones? Was it written to the New York Stock Exchange? Who got the damn money? If it's necessary, we can have a conversation about whether it's necessary or not. But we can't have much of an informed conversation until we understand who got the $17 billion. Or did the $17 billion... Oh, gee, I thought this wasn't supposed to happen after the damn tax breaks. I'm sorry, I'm swearing too much. I apologize. But honest to God, who got the money? Cherchez l'argent. Follow the money. Who got the money? So suddenly, the meaning behind this headline that I've got from MSN Money, stocks storm back from huge losses, makes a little more sense. Down as much as 343 points, the Dow closes with a loss of just under 16 points. A huge financial rally and short covering turns the market around. Huh? The market's turned around? All those losses were erased from last week into this week? So now they can write the check back? The European market can write, the French bank can write the check back to the government of France for what, the $83 billion that got pumped in last week? I mean, look! I didn't just fall off the turnip truck. It took a $17 billion infusion of cash to turn around a 343-point nosedive. What's it going to take tomorrow? And how long until the six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,400 and there's atonal music? I'm not doing what David was talking about a little bit ago. I'm not wishing it. Because, you see, we have a family tradition here. We know what happens when the big boys lose big. It really gets bad for us. You know, when one Wall Street dude starts heading for the ledge, that means there's hundreds, thousands, millions of poor folks going to really take it where the sun don't shine. This isn't journalism. Stocks storm back from huge losses. That's not journalism. That's propaganda. That's just lying. How about stock market propped up with crutch made of money? What do these news stories mean? I got to do some reading after the program. When it says the Fed pumped $17 billion into the market, the hell does that mean? Somebody help, please. I mean, economist, accountant, anybody? Was this a loan? Was this just a gimme? Can I write a letter to the Fed? Because I'm not going to ask for any $17 billion. The people associated with the horn, I can keep them alive for 4 or 5 years on $500,000. And that's everybody. Which reminds me, I was asked to make things a little bit clearer after the discussion about finances and fundraising and stuff last night. They said, you know, tell us where you are. Well, here we are. We're 16 days through August. We're halfway done with August. And we have raised not quite $600 this month of the $2,000 that we need to raise to realistically keep going from month to month. So that's the answer to that question. Our good friend and incredibly intelligent person, Lottie, in the chat room is explaining to me, Bob, they made $17 billion available to investors. It's welfare. It's welfare. Okie doke. I got it. Let's go to the phones. John's calling. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, mate, how are you?
I'm okay. Good to hear from you.
Oh, yeah.
Better now.
Well, I'll tell you, this financial, you know, market stuff has been kind of wild to watch from over here, because the Australian markets have wiped off 20% in the last week. Now, you know this. One of my clients that I do web work for is a headhunter, but it's dealing with financials and securities and taxes and whatnot, and they're, it's run by a couple of certified accountants.
Okay.
And they were, for the first time, I was in the office yesterday, for the first time, I actually saw them logged on to their, you know, stock market, you know, web doohickey thing, and actually watching what was going on. And we've been having some discussions just in the last couple of months how there is this crash coming. And, you know, I've talked about this on my show. You've spoken about some of this, that we're getting to a situation where, you know, things are running on hot air. Now, one of the first things that he was telling me is he's convinced there's a big crash coming, and, you know, this is, he mentioned to me a couple of weeks ago, and he wasn't sure how far off it was. I kept saying before the end of the year, but he said, you know, it's coming. Stuff is way overextended, and it comes from the fact that there's been way too much cheap credit out there, and people are leveraged so heavily with a lot of the stock that they own. So you end up, a lot of the situation that happens, you have people who, you know, their stock might lose $1, but because they only actually own 10% of it, they have effectively lost 10. And watching the spin that's gone on.
But I thought that was all, John, wait a minute. I thought that stuff was all eliminated after we saw the nightmare that margin purchasing caused in 1929. I thought we fixed that.
I asked that very question of this gentleman yesterday, and he said that was all smoke. Nothing ever changed. As far as he can, that was all really smoke. Not much ever changed, and the, you know, all this cash that's being injected everywhere is, you know, purely a desperation attempt to pull it, to try and pull it back and not have a rush on selling. And so there was a massive sell-off yesterday. And this morning on the news, this guy from the Eureka Report said, oh, well, this is a good thing, you see. When the people panic, that means that we're at the end of the correction.
Huh?
I swear to you, one of the leading, you know, mainstream media guys said, when people seem to have a scared sell-off, that means that the correction is almost over. Now, there is one television economist that I like, and it's this guy Alan Kohler, and he's on the Australian ABC, and he's a funny guy, and he is very anti the establishment when it comes to the spin. I think he gives some really good information. And the other night he had some, you know, some graphs showing the way the stocks have dropped, showing the value of the Australian dollar on things, and also the price of oil. And it was labeled the good, bad, the ugly, and the disgusting. And he's the only one that you hear any of this truly honest kind of opinion, because it seems as though on all the commercial networks, they all have people from the major banks, the major fund operators, who obviously have an agenda to try and stop people from freaking out. And we have two major mortgage companies here who get almost 40 to 50% of their loan money from that crappy loan market in the United States. So they're almost on the verge of collapse because of this. And they're trying to find ways to buy new loans from other markets. So the U.S. market is having a direct effect.
Oh, it's a case of America sneezing and the world getting the flu.
Absolutely.
Now, see, this same webpage, John, that has this stock market's rocky ride, stocks storm back from huge losses. You know, when you storm back from huge losses, that means you've gone into positive ground, as far, I mean, at least the way I read English. But it turns out that, you know, it went from a 343 dive to only closing 17 points down or whatever. On the same page where that is, there's an ad. And it kind of goes to what you just said. It says, start investing with $100 or less. Buy stocks for $4 with ShareBuilder. Why don't they just put on an ad that says, come to Vegas?
Oh, well, yeah. And this is the other thing where I appreciate the conversations that I have with this client of mine. And I really should do an interview with him sometime, because here's a guy whose company basically fills executive positions. And he has very little time for executive spin, personally. I can see why he went into headhunting and probably got out of doing the actual accounting work. But the one thing that he was saying to me, he said, right now, the best investment that you can have, and I don't know what if you have these in the States, but there's an outfit, and I believe it's international, called ING, and they do these just super saver, high interest savings accounts. That's all that they do. And he's saying, what you should be doing now, if you have extra money, first put it in one of these type of accounts that's solid, has a guaranteed interest rate, and is backed. And then once that gets to a certain point, open up another account in another bank. Start spreading it around in case the banks start to collapse. And he says, in the next couple of years, cash will be king. You won't be able to buy credit for love or money. And it's going to end up becoming a very, very cash-based society. And if you actually have cash, you'll be okay. But at the moment, there's so much tied into the stock market. The entire superannuation system, which is like the pension system here, is all in the stock market. And this is one of the problems why Australia's stock market has been just going through the roof in recent times, compared even, you know, further rises than the United States, is because a few years ago, they reorganized the superannuation system, which basically forces every single person to invest in the stock market.
Yeah, it's compulsory gambling.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And
you know, I've got a choice as to whether to go to Vegas or Atlantic City or one of these riverboat casinos. I've got a choice. I don't have to walk in if I don't want to gamble. But for most people with their 401ks. And what used to be pensions, you know, they're in the market involuntarily. I hope I can get Dr. Bill back on the air. He's been having some technical problems that I have to try to sort out tomorrow, John. But I hope I'm not talking out of school when I say this. He said he got a note because a lot of his pension monies are tied up in the market, and he's ready to retire. And he just got this note from his broker the other day saying, by the way, you're down $4,000 for July. And this isn't even taking into account what's going on in August. And he said,
you know, that's just incredible how you can have that just vaporize outside of any of your control.
Poof.
Yeah. And there's going to be a lot more of that poof going on. I mean, what we've had, $17 billion injected one day, $19 billion another in the U.S. markets. The French have done billions. I believe the Korean market lost huge. Now, the Australian Federal Reserve has yet to jump. But I think by the end of today, they will be. Because we always kind of follow on after America closes, you know, their market.
Yeah, the news is just hitting you.
Yeah, and so, you know, I mean, it's all over the City Morning Herald and the Age and the ABC, and there was all this kind of, you know, even Howard comes out this morning and says, now everyone, don't overreact. It's all good. Even though you see your life savings disappearing, it's all good. Just relax. And I don't know if that's really going to wash, because we, you know, we have foreclosures at record levels. It's a bit of a mess.
Well, John, the reason they have to say relax, relax, it's all good, is because while the Australian people, the American people, mostly I'm talking about the American people, won't get off their lazy asses to go and demand that a criminal regime be stopped, impeached, and removed from office for spying on us, or for wiretapping us, or for illegally detaining us, or for starting a war based on nothing but a host of lies, they won't do. But by God, if you affect their wallets, they will get the pitchforks and the torches.
Oh yeah. Oh.
You know, chuck a couple of bank presidents out a 40th story window and see if that doesn't change some attitudes.
Well, you know, we could be seeing some of that. Not that I'm.
I'm not advocating that happen. I'm not advocating, but that's the way people think.
Yeah, and it's one of these things. There's kind of the juxtaposition between you and it's got to be similar in the States. You have this side of politics that keep trying to tell you that you've never had it better, you've never had it better, you've never had it better, but yet the fundamentals are all wrong, and it's falling apart. And again, I was shocked when I found out that a company like Rams Home Loans, which is this outfit here, could actually be getting 50% of their finances from the American low doc funds. How is that, one, legal?
But John, brother, it's all legal if you've got enough money. It's all legal.
Mm. This is true. But then again, you know, the central banks have often said, you know, I care not who is the elected official. If you print the nation's money, you are above the law. You control the government. And it's just been an amazing thing to watch and see the overspinning, just changing day to day. Trying to tell people this is, you know, because when this all started, they said, look, this stuff that's happening in America will have no effect on us. Next day, 10% wiped off the markets. And how can you say that it's not going to have an effect when you've been giving out home loans to people that don't even have any documentation to prove that they can pay back the loan? I find that astounding. You know, they advertise here that, oh, you're an independent businessman, or, you know, a contractor. Don't worry about it. You don't have your tax returns. You don't have up to date financials. Don't worry. We can get you on that home loan, and in fact, we'll even loan you the deposit.
I know. No closing costs.
It's absolutely insane. And with the fact that you can't buy a house in Sydney for less than $500,000.
And we're not talking about a mansion in Sydney.
No, we're talking about two bed, one bathroom, hardly a postage stamp on the road. And it's just, I've watched the housing market here just go absolutely stupid. You know, homes have doubled in value in less than a decade. How are average people supposed to be able to afford that? And in the meantime, they haven't been building enough, you know, median rent apartments in this city. There's a massive rental crisis in this town.
Well, John, that's you and I are on the same page here, because And I don't know if it's possible to have a thoroughgoing understanding of how all of this works. I think it's possible to have a thoroughgoing understanding of how the scam works, okay?
Right.
But if, for instance, you go to Morgantown, West Virginia, which is a lovely area, and you drive out on Interstate 68 just out of town to the Cheat Lake area. You can look out there, and I mean, John, there are mansions. I mean, we're talking, you know, Jed and Ellie and Granny, you know, those kinds of mansions sitting on tops of mountains overlooking Cheat Lake. It's beautiful. And they're clinging to hillsides and yada, yada, yada. And yet, if you look around with any degree of perspicacity whatsoever, you can't help but go, what's supporting these? And I don't mean the foundations or the footers. I mean, what are people doing that enables them to buy this kind of thing? There are older homes that cost a fortune, too, so that, you know, you've got a house payment that's $1,500, $2,000 a month. What are you doing that pays you that kind of money? Because if you're making $2,000 a month house payment, you're making God only knows what in the way of an insurance payment. It takes a lot of juice to keep that thing powered up. The water, you know, you've got to be at that point at $3,000 a month, and at that point, that means that in order to keep eating, you got to be at $4,000 a month. To make the house, to make the car payment, you're at, you know, $5,000 a month because everybody's got two or three cars. What kind of phony baloney economy is supporting this?
Well, and I think we're part of this. We're the elephant in the room in this scam is also unfortunately us, because what I've been watching here in Australia is they've pushed so hard this idea of ownership and status, that your happiness has to come through having a bigger house, bigger and more numerous amount of cars in your driveway, kind of situation. I watched a friend's son, and I used to just shake my head, had a perfectly fine home that he had, you know, fairly well paid off. There was nothing wrong with it. And so not only that, they have the two SUVs, and that, you know, and you know, it's like, why do you need these massive vehicles? It's like, well, we have children. And I just look at him sideways. So then he reinvests some of the money that he's paid into the home he owns to buy a plot of land. So then he starts building another home that's bigger. And it's totally not necessary. It was gorgeous, but it was just ridiculous.
Redundant.
It was nuts. Well, he ends up hard up for money coming to the family, and the family's like going, oh, he's struggling, and it's just like he's overextended. And it's only because people have been, you know, living way past their means on cheap credit.
But aren't we driven to that, John? Like sheep to the slaughter, aren't we driven to that? Every time you turn on the television, your breath stinks, your underarms are, you know, are growing fur, you know, your car sucks, nobody likes you, refinance now.
It's absolute madness, you know. And then the next step in that is these retiree loans that are looking to cause massive problems. And you probably have these where, you know, elderly couple gets to basically sell off the title to their home.
Yeah, it's around here they call it a reverse mortgage.
Yeah, they call them that here as well. And
what a fraud!
It's an absolute fraud. And what people are discovering, because you make no payments on any of this until you die, which means that then, you know, the money is recouped by the bank by getting ownership of your home. Well, because you don't actually make any payments, the interest is just going through the roof because they're doing it as though it's a no payments for, you know, so many years type loan, and the interest just starts to add up.
Yeah,
people are finding that, you know, they got a deal on their $500,000 home, and in 10 years. They've lost all that value completely on interest. It's
some
gone.
Deal.
And so when it gets to the point where, you know, being unable to take care of oneself and maybe have to go to the home and then go and say, okay, we're going to cash this thing out and use the whatever's left to put mom and dad in aged care, they're finding out that there ain't nothing left. gone. And, you know, I think that this is another one of those scams that's just trying to pump more hot air into the system, because this thing's been on just like a runaway train.
Well, at what point then does the market have to become reality-based? Because clearly it's not. You know, going all the way back to the Reagan administration, this market has been propelled on phony baloney schemes to steal the middle class's money from it. Whether it was the conversion of pensions into 401k, oh, you'll make a fortune, you'll make 15%, it's very unusual for a mutual fund to make less than 15% a year. You don't want some stupid old pension, you want to be in the market, you want to be a high roller, you want to be a player. And see,
I don't know when that correction is going to come in. I think the only way that change is really going to happen is, this is not something that I want, but that there's going to have to be another massive collapse. And then we need central banking reform. That's a huge part of it. Because, I mean, the central banks being able to turn $1 into 10 and loan it to their friends to, you know, start hedge funds, these leverage buyout outfits, which are nothing. They do nothing. And, you know, so much. And the other big problem that feeds a lot of this is the fact that in Australia, in the United States, we don't manufacture anymore. We have nothing real anymore. We deal all on service and vapor. It's all, none of it turns into anything of real, tangible value, and it's coming back to haunt us in a major way.
Oh, in many major ways. Look, you know, Mattel is... One more lead paint scandal and Mattel could be done for here in the U.S. And everybody's, well, how did this happen to Mattel? Here, let me explain it to you. It happened to Mattel because Mattel didn't want to pay Americans to make toys for American children anymore. Instead, they decided that they would pay some Chinese peasant less. And now they're looking up and surprised that, little baby Lumpkin in the U.S. is chewing on a piece of lead paint and rotten its brain. That's how that happened.
I tell you, you know, I've really, really wondered what has been going on inside the heads of some of the, you know, the bigwigs at Mattel, because I reckon that they've had a massive wake-up call on the short-sightedness of doing business this way. And Mattel, you know, Fisher-Price, all that, has had a long, you know, pretty good standing as, as...
A good company.
Products. Huh?
A good company.
Well, you know, I remember some of my favorite toys as a little kid were, you know, things from Fisher-Price. And they have a history. And I think that this is something that they really, really regret, because, like you said, one more and it's over.
And, you know, this guy complaining on the radio down in Charleston today, it's smacking the daylights out of the Toys R Us, because people are seeing the Mattel toys are gone. They pick up the toy from some other company and it says made in China, and they look at the sales clerk and say, well, is this one safe? And the sales clerk says, geez, I don't know. And they don't. And you don't, and we don't, and I don't.
Someone in the chat room earlier made the comment, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, said, you know, I think it's a time to return to the way things were in the past, where kids didn't really have all these plastic bloody toys, but they, you know, were forced to create fun with their imagination. And I think a huge step towards that will be when we finally end this culture of fear. Because, you know, I remember when I was a kid, when you were a kid, you know, after school, it was pretty much, you know, you got booted out the door to go and run around and be out with your friends.
Yeah, I'll call you for dinner.
Yeah, just don't miss dinner. That's it. They hardly ever knew what you were up to. But you went out, you got exercise just because you were, you know, you're walking across town to get to your friend's place, or you're going out deep in the woods to, you know, go hunting for crayfish or whatever it is. And, you know, all this comes together. Our sedentary society, our commercialism, our consumerism, this all comes together to bring us to the situation where the society as we know it is really on the verge of falling apart.
It is, and I think this toy thing is sort of a metaphor for the larger economy, John, because what they've done is exactly what you're talking about. You know, we got little kids here. A nice little Chinese Barbie,
mm-hmm.
$8-9, whatever, if you're not buying the tricked out model. And we were up to our eyeballs in Barbies. And they're meaningless, but they're cheap to produce. They're cheap to put on the shelves, and you can sell one for $9, and the middleman and the distributor and the shipper, and for $9 for a Barbie, and you can still make money for everybody because there's some little peasant chained to a table somewhere in the interior of China, dying for them. And we weren't concerned with the morality of any of that, John. Until we found out that Lumpkin was chewing on lead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it comes to the short-sightedness. You know, there was always that, you know, America can't have unions because then we can't compete in the open international market. Well, it's like, no. We don't want to compete in the international market. We want to survive as a nation. And
yeah.
This idea that having to go to the lowest common denominator when it comes to labor to compete against countries that have no labor laws, no minimum wage, this is the wrong way to go. It should be setting the bar higher, saying we won't buy stuff from these countries until they bring their standards up to our level, which is a whole lot harder.
See, I don't see that as crazy talk.
No, but it's a whole lot harder. That actually takes work.
Yeah.
And that actually, you know, the one of the saddest days I can remember in the last decade or so was when I heard that the Zenith factory shut down.
Yeah.
Because that meant that there was no longer a television made in the United States. And you cannot tell me, you can never convince me that an American outfit or an Australian outfit could not build TVs competitively with quality and supporting local jobs and be competitive. I do not believe it for a second, and I think we also need to have a return to things, you know, like in the 70s. In a way to protect local jobs, you add tariffs to cheaper imported goods so that they then have to compete on a dollar-for-dollar basis against our products. And I think all nations need to do this.
Well, that's what Dennis Kucinich keeps talking about. He says, you know, we don't need free trade. We need fair trade.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, this is again one of those things we've been as a population effectively spun into not understanding even the definitions of terms. They give you the impression that free trade means that it's fair, but that's not the case. Just like we've been come to, a lot of people have become convinced that, you know, capitalism is a form of government as opposed to a financial system.
An economic theory.
Absolutely.
You know,
but
while we were talking, just to show the ridiculousness of it, I did a quick search. Marilyn Monroe Barbie, white dress, 7-year itch doll, $99 on eBay. Now, I mean, this is exemplary. Everybody, a lot of people are aware of the tulip boom in the Netherlands, in Holland, in the 17th century, mid-17th century. They were trading in tulips, and they collapsed their economy over it. I remember the Beanie Baby boom of the mid-1990s. people were selling, you know, you remember the Beanie Babies, John?
Yeah, vaguely. It was one of those pop culture things.
Yeah, people were buying, selling, and trading Beanie Babies for $50,000 and $60,000 and $70,000 based on the attributes of the paper tag hung by the plastic clip through the ear of this little doll that was stuffed with styrofoam beads.
And
that's our economy. That's our economy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's pork belly futures. It's Dan Aykroyd standing on the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade in Trading Places, screaming "sell, sell, sell," and the two old farts sitting there, you know, and you won your bet. Here's your dollar.
Yeah. Yep. It's all a game for those that really control things. You know, even you know this you know client of mine. You know, he constantly refers to, you know, the stock market as the rich man's casino. And people don't realize that it's all just a massive gambling game.
It's a fraud. It's a legalized fraud.
It's a legalized racket.
Well, that too. Hey, John, it's really, really good talking to you. You know what? Your phone sounds great.
Yeah, I know, doesn't it?
Love those dudes at CityNet, don't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. No, it's been really, really good. I'm amazed at how clean the system's been, and obviously your connection is stellar over there. You know, it's amazing. You know, and I've just had an upgrade here recently, and to actually get real bandwidth is just liberating as all get out. I can't even describe it.
Well, I've been watching in the chat room here, John, and our dear friend Nanette says that there's some lightning blowing through where she is, which means it'll probably get to me in another 30 minutes or so. You know what? You know what's really nice about this? I'm not sitting here having kittens with crocheted tails, wondering if we're going to incur another $750 repair bill for the telephone hybrid, because this company, these CityNet guys at CityNet.net, are actually competent. And they do a great job, and there's like three layers of protection between the Comrex unit and the external world.
I've still been amazed at and have not been able to understand how on the old system that the telephones could get hit like that so regularly. To me, that just kept screaming that something in the phone grid was wrong. Don't ask me.
Well, for the longest time, Verizon had no competition, and so they didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to provide much. It was de minimis service at premium prices.
That explains absolutely everything. And this is why we also need real competition in all markets. And when you hear these free marketeers go off, they're not about competition. They're about manipulation.
They're protectionists. They're welfare
yep.
queens. Absolutely. That's the thing. All the money that got pumped into the market, John.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe in a free market, free markets have to be free to fail. Or it's not a free market. You pump $17 billion in one day into a market, you can stop talking to me about free market capitalism. Because that ain't it.
Sure isn't. I'm gonna have a talk with this mate and see if I can maybe get him up for a conversation. Maybe between you, me, and him, I think it could be very, very enlightening and interesting. And you know, he's a New Zealander too, so it's entertaining always just to listen to the accent.
Oh yeah, I love listening to Kiwis.
Never,
but,
never.
You know, my fish and chips. You know, there's actually some sort of logic to it. It's something about I's, E's, and U's kind of being confused around. But some linguists actually say that the New Zealand accent is probably closer to traditional Old English, and it's because they were so isolated that there was little change.
Same thing happened in Appalachia.
Yeah, and as you know, and as things developed and changed in Europe because of other influences, New Zealand kind of was isolated from all that, you know, because, I mean, they're just a couple of islands over there. Mm-hmm. You know, Australians like to claim them as the extra state, which, you know, all the best New Zealand actors and musicians are assumed to be Australians, but that's a whole nother story. But you got to wrap things up, man. I just figured you opened up the door on something I've been chatting with someone who knows.
Yeah.
And I've been finding it really interesting as someone who works constantly with, you know, Rio Tinto, Shell. I mean, we're talking massive, you know, outfits.
Mm-hmm.
And just sees it as, you know, it's the rich man's game, and, you know, we shouldn't really be playing in it the way that we're playing in it. It's that simple.
I agree. Thank you, John. Can we look forward to you tomorrow morning?
You got it.
Or later tonight for you?
Yep, I will be on.
Beautiful. Talk to you then.
All right, man. Take care.
Later. And Alan, I hope, is still with us. Nope, didn't. I was afraid of that. Michelle. Oh, Michelle.
Hello.
There you are.
Oh, okay. I was enjoying a conversation with Agnes while you guys were talking money. You know, the girl thing and the guy thing. Guys talk about money, and girls talk about guys talking about money.
I don't talk about money very well, though. I mean, maybe I'm just not masculine enough because I'm thoroughly confused by it all. I don't understand.
Well, I like feminine side in my radio show host.
I don't understand the people, Michelle, who want to spend their entire lives accumulating more money and watching the big money have little monies. I like what money does.
Well, I think what it is the inbreeding. I think so much inbreeding, they've kind of gotten psychotic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be humorous.
No, I understand, and I'm laughing. I am.
I don't understand it either. I can't, you know, when I was younger, like you, I was brought up, you know, under the Protestant influence. And I used to pray. That's hard for me to say now. I used to pray to God.
Oh, I did a ton of it.
That I could win the lottery, right? And the reason why I wanted to win the lottery is because I saw so many people around me that needed money. And, you know, there were the few. Living in a small town, you know, there's the couple rich families, and then there's a lot of lower, mid to lower income, and then there's a lot of poor, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just kept thinking, you know, if I could win, you know, the lottery, win $1 million, that was way back when, that I could help these people, you know, and I could do something that would get them out. And then in my 20s, I realized, you know, money's not going to make anything for anyone. Doing the right thing for the society is what's going to do it. Making sure that we're not giving the tax breaks and the tax loopholes to the ones that already have it, you know, these things. And that's kind of why I called, because I asked Agnes about this past, this write-up. It's a few years old, but, you know, what a billion really is, you know.
I remember that. I think I saw that a while back, Michelle, you know, a billion hours ago, Jesus was walking the earth or something like that.
It's a billion seconds ago. It was, you have to think of this because they suggest the government uses it, you know, they'll throw out, oh, it was $1 billion for this contract. But a billion seconds ago, it was 1959. A billion minutes ago, Jesus was alive. A billion hours ago, our ancestors were living in the Stone Age. A billion days ago, no one walked on their feet, 2 feet on Earth. And $1 billion lasts 8 hours and 20 minutes at the rate our government spends it. So that's a few years old. So let's say it only lasts 7 hours and 20 minutes.
Sure.
Or maybe. But, I mean, because it is true. We, you know,
well, it's a big, but by the same token, Michelle, it's a big country, and stuff costs money.
Right.
I understand that. It's where the billions go so fast. $9 billion, which I think we did the calculations one time. It might have been our good friend David in Tennessee that did it, because he was a packing specialist. $9 billion in $100 bills was something on the order of 12 or maybe 18 semi-tractor trailer loads.
Right.
Okay. That money, that much of it, disappeared. Just lost it, can't find it, can't account for it. In cash, in Baghdad.
Right.
You know, here's some more math. 190,000 AK-47s. Somewhere in Baghdad. Can't find it. Lost it. Dog ate it. Disappeared. Just gone.
Yeah.
Huh? You know, I'm supposed to hear something like that and go, oh, well, you know, stuff happens.
Shit happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of why I brought it up, because, I mean, the stock market, you hear them make these statements on the news broadcast. And I can't help but wonder what the people in our societies, what our citizens are thinking. You know, why are they not thinking, my God, trillion, 2 trillion, 3 trillion?
I would like,
wow.
Michelle, I would like to know, if you took a Bush voter, this has to be, it only works with a Bush voter, and on payday you walk up to them and you say, we're sorry, we just lost your paycheck. What? Well, when are you going to, oh, we're not going to pay you. That money was just lost. We're sorry. And then get to look at the Bush voter and say, that's what you did to America.
Yep.
Would that bring it home to them?
I you know, when you started off this hour with, you know, talking about the stocks and talking about the money, and you said, you know, whose money is that? And I posted in the room, I said, we the people.
Yeah.
And the reality here...
But as of tonight, now that the $17 billion's been pumped away, Michelle, it's not we the people's money anymore.
Oh, yeah, well...
It wasn't a loan. It was welfare.
Yeah, yeah. But we still owe it, though, Bob.
Oh, sure.
I mean, we the people are taxes.
Yeah.
Not the big corporations, just like you said, it's welfare. We still owe it. Our debt has enlarged because of these people that are on the corporate welfare line.
Yeah.
You know, I hate it when they bring up welfare for the people, you know, that are low income. My God, it's 1.5% of the budget. You know, give me a break. But the fact is that our great grandchildren are going to be in debt.
Yeah.
For this.
Yeah,
you know, when John was talking about, you know, well, if you get your money and you do this, and then, if anything, money is going to be the only thing that... No! Friggin' not in the U.S. The U.S. dollar is going to be worth crap. Pesos, a wooden pug.
Yeah.
Pug, you know? If you keep plugging, if the feds keep plugging, that devalues the dollar.
Well, at least that's what they taught me in econ class. That's why I wondered if maybe I wasn't paying attention.
No, you were paying attention. So, I mean, I love John. He's great. But the fact is money ain't going to...
Yeah, I know.
You can wipe your butt with it. But that's about it.
Well, Michelle...
It's not sanitary. You got to go.
Yeah, I got to roll.
All right. Love you guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And quickly to Alan. Hey, Alan. Sorry you had to wait.
Hey, Bob. That's okay. I was just wondering, let me ask you a question. Was money borrowed in our name, the taxpayer's name today, to keep the stock market afloat?
Yes.
It was?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
I mean, that, that, I mean,
corporations.
Dude, that was not George Bush's money. That's and it wasn't Mitch McConnell's money. It wasn't, no, that was your money. That was, you know, because that's what they kept reminding us of when Bush was first running for president in 2000. Hey, we need a tax break because it's your money. Well, they just took your money, Alan, and created Wall Street welfare with it to the tune of $17 billion. They did $19 billion the other day.
Yeah, that's sickening.
Yeah, it is sickening. Because if
I
we
have stock,
go
I
ahead.
Have some shares of I have some shares of solar energy stock, and it went down today. So I guess it's just all like one big pool or something.
Yeah, I mean it's and of course, if you ask them, they'll say that they're trying to do this to keep to keep everything from going in the tank, and to keep everybody from losing everything. But the reason all this has happened is because their economic policy has been phony baloney all along.
Yeah, I agree with you. Hey, I got an idea about them peeping into your house with their satellites or whatever.
Yeah.
Next time you have your house roofed,
mm-hmm.
Get a bunch of aluminum and put it underneath the roof paper.
Can't see through it, or is this just the ultimate tinfoil hat?
Yeah, I imagine it'll work, but it sounds crazy. We have to resort to such ideas.
Well, I swear, I think it would be cool. I think Americans who object to this, everybody ought to paint a big circle with a finger giving the bird to the sky. We got to roll out of here, Alan. I'm sorry it took so long.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now. Thanks, thanks everybody. Man, what a busy little night. What a great night. And I said I was cranky coming in. You guys made it all better, like you always do. Thanks, Agnes, for producing. It's just now saying it's 90 degrees in the studio with the sun down. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch. Ben Birch, you enjoy that vacation. Please. WhiteRoseSociety.org. I think it's the first vacation he's taken in ages. Enjoy, Ben. Enjoy. You and Katie and the puppies have a wonderful, wonderful time. And, of course, always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Jose Padilla and his two co-defendants have been convicted on charges of conspiracy to kidnap, maim, and murder people and for providing material support to terrorists. Sentencing will take place December 5th. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez called the verdict announced this afternoon, quote, a significant victory in our efforts to fight the threat posed by terrorists and their supporters, end quote. In Oregon, the former director of an Islamic charity accused of supporting Al-Qaeda surrendered to authorities and pled not guilty to federal charges. Opening arguments in the case against the charity began yesterday. The White House has approved a plan to expand domestic spying with the use of satellites and aircraft sensors. This technology was previously restricted to mainly foreign surveillance. The technology will be used to combat illegal immigration, natural disasters, and terrorism threats. In the deadliest insurgent attack since the Iraq War began, the Azadi tribe in the northern part of the country has so far sustained 500 deaths in the four simultaneous suicide gasoline tanker truck bombings earlier this week. Al-Qaeda is the primary suspect. In Afghanistan, U.S. and Afghan forces are hammering the Tora Bora region near the Pakistan border region, once thought to be harboring Osama bin Laden. Afghan authorities say 50 militants have been killed. Venezuelan leader Hugo Chavez is moving closer to becoming a dictator. Yesterday, he proposed ending presidential term limits. In Guatemala, another politician has been assassinated in the deadliest election campaign since the country's civil war. More than 40 candidates have been killed in the past few months. Bodies are being pulled out of the rubble south of Lima, Peru, after magnitude 8.0 struck there last night. Many aftershocks are rolling through the area. At least 350 people have been killed by falling buildings. In Minnesota, rescuers have found two more bodies in the ruins of the 35W bridge. The death toll is now at 11. And rescue workers at the collapsed Utah mine are drilling a fourth hole in those six miners. Sounds have been detected deep in the earth, but rescuers say it may not be their missing colleagues. Quarterback Michael Vick's charges could get harsh.